Sports. Spoken here.
Right now, Adam Hogue, Jared Payton, Mark Carmen.
The beat is on.
You're 100% right.
This is The Beat on 720 WGN.
720 WGN indeed. Welcome in. Beat is with you till 7 o'clock. I'm Mark Carmen. Kevin Powell sitting in the big seat today.
What's up, Carm? Do I have to stand? Why are you standing?
I get excited.
Make me nervous.
I get excited. And
I don't know if that was protocol or something.
No. Here, I'll sit down for you. Let me get on the level.
High level.
You.
Yeah.
Okay.
There we go.
All right. Very good. Blackhawks win last night. We're going to start there. Chris Hind from the Chicago Tribune will be with us at 3:35. We are on a major search to help the city today. Benny the Bull, Barry Anderson, the man behind the red furry mask, is retiring.
Yes, it's the lead sports story here in town and really in the entire nation, Carm. Everybody's talking about it.
We will be taking texts and calls all day long at 312-981-7200. What should Barry do next? What's the next move for Benny the Bull? And if you'd like to try out and be Benny the Bull, we have contacts at the Chicago Bulls, and we're looking for somebody with a lot of passion because Barry put a lot into that uniform for the last 12 years. Team is in transition. There's a lot going on. Mm-hmm. And the last thing we need right now from a Bulls standpoint is a mascot who's not all in. We need an all-in mascot, and somebody's going to carry on the tradition. You feel me?
12 years. Here's the quote you and I were talking about earlier. Quote, after 12 incredible years, it's come time for me to explore this world, this life, without my fuzzy red friend. That's a quote from Barry Anderson, the legendary mascot for the Bulls.
Hashtag single tear. I mean, I feel that. Cubs are playing at Wrigley. We'll do a little Cubs post after that one's over. It's 2-0 Cubbies, bottom of 7. I was at the ball yard yesterday. You have been out there.
Yeah.
And have lots of thoughts about the new clubhouse and everything that is going on over at Wrigley, where they actually did lose a game yesterday, but that won't happen too many times this year. We'll keep you up to date on the White Sox. Well, the NBA playoffs is going on, so a lot of sports news all day long as well. But
the
so,
RBC Heritage,
of course,
is that charm?
Well,
that's golf.
If you're going to throw out the RBC Heritage, then we got to go Monte Carlo.
Yeah, and I was going to ask, what's the tennis tournament this week?
We got a huge final tomorrow. Gael Monfi, one of my guys, beat his fellow countryman.
Great forehand.
Yeah, tremendous forehand. That's a good take there, Powell. I like that. KP all over.
I only bring the hot takes when it comes to tennis, Carm. Don't get me riled up.
You know what's also good about Monfi is his backhand. He's got a good backhand.
Backhand and a good forehand?
And a serve.
That's about all of the analyzing of tennis I'll give you. Yeah. Solid forehand, good backhand.
Big win over his countryman, Joe Wilfrey Tsonga, will play a Rafael Nadal in the final. But that'll be tomorrow, KP. So I was going to leave that out. Right. But speaking of tomorrow, by the way, we will be out at the United Center with the extended pregame live, 11 to 1:30. Steve Cochran, Dave Ennett, and yours truly. I will get to sit alongside those two and talk some Blackhawk hockey. So if you're coming out to the UC tomorrow, please come over and give me a hug.
Cochran, Ennett, and the Carm, three powerhouses in the broadcasting industry out at the UC.
Well, there's two there, and then I'll be hanging out. But yes, I'm looking forward to being out at the United Center tomorrow. So last night, here's where I want to get your thoughts here as we start the show. Listen, great to have Duncan Keith back, 30-plus minutes, and we'll get into the minutia a little bit more with Chris Hine getting the first goal. That was awesome. And Corey Crawford's been amazing, stopping, now 46 of 49 shots.
But really, both goaltenders. But
that's true. Yeah, Brian Elliott deserves a ton of credit, too. Yeah. But so, you've got Vladimir Tarasenko putting the Blues ahead.
Yes.
And then you've got Coach Q getting word from above that he should challenge, which is brand new to the NHL this year. If you missed the game last night, the Blues went ahead. The Blackhawks looked at the video. They said, "Hey, we got an offsides penalty going on here. Let's let the officials review the tape." And to get it done, Coach Q basically went over the top, up on the hockey boards, like, anything to get attention. I just think there's a lot of people in life who are like worried about being that out there and being that angry and being like willing to, like, if Fred Hoiberg or Robin Ventura were in that position, I guarantee you they don't get the attention, right?
Whatever it takes from Q. He went up on the top ropes to get the officials' attention, and thank God he did, because was that a momentum-changing moment of that game or what?
Yeah, I mean, Jori Lehtira was offsides, and Q's quote after the game is, "We got word late." And then he's, you know, I was screaming like crazy, man, just to get the challenge in time. There's a lot of guys. Like, Q is a guy who, I mean, in the history of Joel Quenneville, he's grabbed his sensitive region to make a point from back over there. He's like the guy's well respected.
Yes.
But there's something missing as far as I feel like for Q in this town. Like that guy, I mean, you got so much talent on that team and you win with great talent, but he really deserves a lot of credit for how hard that team is always focused. And you got Jonathan Toews, you know, at the top of that. And there's a phenomenal piece in the Tribune by Chris Hine today where Toews was literally at like 12 years old, was
doing chin-ups and organizing workout sessions with his 11-year-old buddies basement.
They would come over at 7. He'd be like, "What's up? Okay, let's go. We're going to the weight room."
Right.
And then at 8, they'd go and hit the rink. And then at 9, the other dudes would be like, "Okay, can we play video games?" "No, we're going to bed because we got to get ready for tomorrow." That was Toews at 11.
Like most 11-year-olds, it was sleepovers were what? It was junk food, video games, movies, staying up late. Jonathan Toews was doing push-ups and chin-ups and had a little circuit of workouts in his basement organized for his friends. They get a little skate session in after that, and then it was bedtime.
And now he's got a garden.
It's
a phenomenal piece by Chris Hine. What was a Kevin Powell sweet sleepover in the 11, 12-year-old range?
It was always, you didn't want to go to bed, right? Because the first kid that went to bed was the one who got tortured by everyone else.
That was me.
I could see that,
right?
You were the one that went to bed first, and then everybody kind of like drew on your face, or
I was always
put the hand in a bucket of water.
I was tired. I was ready. I mean, it's 10 o'clock in the Carm household. 10 o'clock, Carm's sleeping.
It's bedtime for the Carm.
Yeah, we're not going. None of this midnight
every sleepover was like pizza, pop, movies. Stay up late. The parents would come down eventually and yell at the kids and tell everyone to go to bed. And then it was hazing the kid who fell asleep first.
We had the Halloween sleepover. Did you ever watch Halloween, the scary movie Halloween?
Yeah, it's one of my all-time favorites.
Right? It was some kid's birthday party. We were all in the basement watching Halloween, and then we're in this basement, and one of my friends, he's like, I can't sleep down here. It's too dangerous. He had to go upstairs and sleep with his older brother, of which the comment at the time
scared
was...
scared him.
The thought was that you'd be more scared of the older brother than in theory, the boogeyman. But yes, Jonathan Toews, everything... If you're a Jonathan Toews fan, which we know you are, you should read this piece.
That article makes me feel lazy.
Oh, it's no question.
Yeah, he puts everybody to shame.
Well, and even like the first face-off of the series, if you go back and watch that, if you're a DVR Blackhawks type like I am, you go back and just watch the way he started the series. He just gets in there for the first face-off, and he is over the top ready to go. It's like a statement, hey, we're here, we're the Blackhawks, and we always beat you, St. Louis, and we're going to do it again.
And again, we will get into this a little bit more with Chris Hine, but we talked about this whole season, really, how much... People were saying Patrick Kane's the best player on the team, and it's hard to... You can make a case for it, right, considering how offensively how lethal he is and the year he put together. But this article sort of brings you back to the moment and gives you perspective on how important Jonathan Toews is to this team and really how good he is, and maybe one of the best players in the entire league, if not the best.
There's no doubt. There. Get the stories that make the city with unlimited digital access to award-winning Chicago Tribune News. Become a member today at chicagotribune.com. We've got the highlights of the big moment from last night coming back here, and Chris Hine at 3:35. Tribute to Benny the Bull as well, 720 WGN.
Jonerson gave him a buckle, Tarasenko at the slot, and a shot by Tarasenko. They score! It was a bang-bang play. Boy, Laterra found Tarasenko cruising in front of the net. Delivered a perfect pass and a perfect shot from Tarasenko. Has the Blues on top at 2-1.
Upon review of the play, the call is determined that the puck was offside.
No, it's offside! Wow! By inches.
So wipe out the goal. It was Tarasenko from Laterra. Folks, we're still tied at one.
There's other elements there that we're going to have to fight through. And we're going to have to find a way to do it. If we expect to beat them, we're going to have to be better in a lot of elements and know that we're going to get calls that aren't going to go our way.
Let it be. Let it be.
The great John Weideman, Troy Murray on WGN Radio. The not as great Ken Hitchcock, who I love looking at Ken Hitchcock. Is that wrong? Did I just get a kick out of looking at Ken Hitchcock?
It's one of those train wreck situations, right? Like you can't look away from it.
It makes me feel like I'm six years old.
It's not a pleasant sight. You have to keep looking for some reason.
He's a very unique Hitchcock.
The shape, there's the proportions are off with everything. Sorry to rip on Ken Hitchcock's physical features here.
It's not right, and I think I told myself that I wouldn't say anything like that on the radio, but these things happened. It just did. So that was the play last night. Latira, who made the pass, which was a phenomenal pass.
Yes.
He was offsides on the play. Now, I don't know how you live your life, Kevin Powell, but I, Mark Carmen, I'm a spirit of the law type and not a letter of the law. And in that particular play for me, even though by the letter of the law, Latira is offsides, there's no way that I thought the Blackhawks actually deserved to get that call in my spirit of the law.
But it was the right call.
But it was the right call.
It was the right call. And it was the clear momentum-changing moment of that entire game.
No doubt. And the Blues, I mean, did they collapse from that? Hard to really say that, but the bottom line is that 4 minutes later, Andrew Shaw is getting crushed in front of the net by Brian Elliott, sticking with it, and then using everything in Andrew Shaw's body to jam one past him.
Shaw is just a little pit bull in there, isn't he? He is so fun to watch. He can be very frustrating at times, taking dumb penalties, but when he's near the net in the scrum, he's a fun player to watch.
I mean, he's unbelievable. And somebody like that who's just willing to take the pound. I mean, if you watch Shaw's goal, there's so much cross-checking going on, and Seabrook's getting crushed on the play as well.
Right.
I mean, there's just so much action there. And
he found the tiniest little slit next to Elliott's skate, threw it in there. Total momentum-changing moment. The larger point, though, for me, for this Blues team, is they are so in their own head. The Ken Hitchcock comments over the past few days have been head-scratching. I don't understand where he's coming from. Talks about the Blackhawks' resolve, and his team has to have that kind of resolve, and we need to hit them 70 times in the game to have a chance. Really interesting stuff from Ken Hitchcock.
312-981-7200. Does anybody feel like moderately guilty that the Blackhawks got a huge break last night? I know that's not a popular take, but I just feel like, what? That didn't count?
For a team that for the Blues fans, like, you know how ticked off that fan base was, right? It's like, we're going to go up 2-0 on the Hawks. We're looking good right now. And then just a dagger of a call. This Blues team, who's been so good in the regular season the past few years and can't do anything in the postseason, was finally rolling, potentially going up 2-0 on the Stanley Cup defending champions, and then they get that call. Because a skate is 6 inches off the blue line, that whole goal gets reversed.
Right. I literally was sitting there, too, watching the game last night thinking, oh, my God, this... which is a moronic thought, but there was a thought that I had was, well, maybe this is just not the year for them. You know, you're going down 2-0, and the Blues have been coming for a while now. That thought creeped through my head, and then a second later, overturn, and then 5 seconds later, goal in, and now 1-1, and I think the Hawks are going to win the series in five.
I was just going to say, I wouldn't be surprised if the Hawks win the next three.
312-981-7200, little room for some Blackhawks talk here if you want to talk about last night, and if anybody's feeling guilty out there, something like along those lines, or want to give props to, per se, a Duncan Keith for his phenomenal return last night. Kevin has a question about reviews now on 720 WGN. Go ahead, Kevin.
Hey, boys. Always great show. I appreciate everything you guys talk about. So my question to you, and the point is, so with all the reviews that go on in hockey, you know, in baseball, in soccer, in football, do you guys feel that it's taking away some of the spirit of the game?
Yes.
There's no way that it took like 3 or 4 angles on that review last night, and they made the right call after they looked at it.
Right.
That they could tell that skate was actually up off the ice before that puck entered. But it really does seem to be taken away, and I've been a 20-year state-certified soccer official. It seems to be really taken away. You know, everybody makes mistakes. Sometimes I tell the players as I'm checking them in, I'm not perfect. So I expect you to play within the level of the law of the game. But, you know, things aren't going to be perfect and you just play. But I heard somebody say, yes, you feel it's taken away from the spirit of the game. And that's pretty much my question.
Kevin, appreciate the phone call, and we'll respond. I don't think you should ever, by the way, tell those kids that you're not perfect, because you just don't need to say that. It's okay. They should, if they don't know that, then that's on them. You're doing the best you can out there. I don't think it takes away from the spirit of the game, but it adds on to the time. So, like, there's the pace of the game, just the whole way.
Yes, that's a good point. Maybe I shouldn't say it takes away from the spirit. I'll say this. You have to get all the calls right. And the problem is, in every league, the way they go about getting to the actual answer to a particular call, to a review, is almost horrible in every single league. The hockey is actually one of the better ones, to be honest, in terms of how quickly they review the plays and sort of the system they have in place. But when you're watching a football game and you see a receiver make a diving catch and get up and start running and scores a touchdown, you know you sort of have to take it easy a little bit. Take a step back, because you almost know for a fact a red challenge flag is coming out. It's you have to get the calls right. Use the technology that's into place. But the actual review system in all of the leagues as a whole is horribly designed, and it does ruin the rhythm and the pacing of games.
I mean, they're playing Let It Be last night down in St. Louis, and you're looking at the officials who are sitting there with their iPads or whatever device they have.
Yeah.
It's amazing to me how reliant on technology we are. Like, think about that. Like, 20 years ago, this dude is just on the ice and he's zooming in or whatever he's doing. That's a whole other skill set that a ref never knew he'd have to have.
And we're going to talk to Chris Hine on the other side of news, but real quickly, Andrew Shaw scores a goal, the officials review it, call it a goal, and then Ken Hitchcock's able to call the challenge on the play that was already reviewed.
Right, which is...
they were reviewing a review already.
Multiple layers.
It.
And I'm like, Hitchcock, this is not going to work out well for you. And I don't know what the right words were for him after the game, but what he did say just seemed kind of hollow about...
They're in their own head, this Blues team.
The St. Louis Blue will... I'm not willing to go so far as to say, like, the Blues are... like some defeated St. Louis Blues. We'll see what goes on tomorrow. I'm sure they'll have a great effort. Chris Hine, as Kevin just said, from the Chicago Tribune, does a great job covering the team. Has a unique piece on Jonathan Toews out today as well. We'll talk to him after the 3:30 news in 2 minutes on 720 WGN.
Keith directs it up the left side to Panarin. Redirects it down ice into the net, and then he scores! Artemi Panarin's first ever NHL playoff goal hits the back of the empty Blues net, and the Hawks are going to beat the Blues and tie this playoff series at one game apiece and take home ice back to the Windy City.
The Panarin bread getting the empty netter. Blackhawks 3, Blues 2, series tied at 1. Pregame tomorrow, 1:30, puck drop at 2. Extended pregame starts at 11 o'clock from the United Center. Steve Cochran, Dave Ennett, guy by the name of Mark Carman will all be there. Kevin Powell sitting in today for Adam Hogue. This is The Beat on 720 WGN as we bring in Chris Hine from the Chicago Tribune. Chris, congratulations, first off, on your piece on Jonathan Toews. That was a phenomenal read, and I did not know that Jonathan Toews actually has a garden where he makes kale and doesn't know how to groom a tomato, which... I think that's the one flaw that we've ever found in Jonathan Toews, that he's not sure how to properly garden a tomato.
I think that's true. I think, you know, one of his goals heading into the off season is probably to maintain the shape he's in, but also to figure out how to grow tomatoes in his home at Lincoln Park. It's flummoxed him now for a little while, it seems like. But yeah, you know, that piece, I'm happy with the response that it's gotten so far. It's going to be in Sunday's paper. It was online yesterday, but it'll be in the paper tomorrow. I just kind of wanted to give a little behind-the-scenes look at, you know, who Jonathan Toews is and kind of what makes him the player, the person that he is.
Yeah, Chris, this is a must-read and really a great look at the captain here. where do we even start? Well, you started off as an 11-year-old. As an 11-year-old organizing workout sessions with his buddies when his friends are coming over to the Taves household thinking they're going to have a fun, relaxed, junk food and movies and staying up late type sleepover like most normal kids. Instead, 11-year-old Jonathan Taves is organizing workouts in his basement before they go for a skate session and then an early night in bed by 9 o'clock. This guy is special, one of a kind. I mean, it's really, really interesting to read about.
He really is, and you could just tell from a young age. And the reason why I wanted that story in there was, you know, it just goes to show from a young age that he was wired to be the best he could yeah. possibly be. You know, everybody I talked to said the same thing. You know, the guy just never had an off switch, and all growing up, he was always the leader of his team. Even when he was playing with older kids, you know, he was always the captain. He was always the leader. That story about the sleepover where his friend comes over and, you know, Taves is all in his workout gear and he's got jock jams playing in the basement and, you know, they're in bed by 9 o'clock. I just thought, you know, if anything encapsulates what this guy, you know, what people have told me he's like and who he was growing up and how he became who he was. It was kind of that story of all the things I had heard about him.
We'll move on to the Blackhawks and the Blues in 1 second, but I like to play amateur psychologist every now and then. You have a big part of your piece is Tom Gross, who was his hockey coach, but he also has a graduate degree in psychology, and he's working with Taves about the mental side of the game as much as the physical. And it just seems like, you know, a lot of times you look at a kid like that and you think, wow, their parents really must have been so on top of him, just pushing, pushing, pushing. But it seems like this guy had as much to do with his development as anything, and he pushed him to the limits, like making him puke in workouts, which, like, a lot of guys, you would think who have a psychology degree would be like, that's too much. But he wanted to, and you talked to him, so I'm curious, you know, what more you got out of it, but that he wanted to show him that, hey, this is as far as you can go, and you know you can go further than everybody out there, so that should give you a certain level of confidence that no matter what you're up against, you can succeed.
That's kind of exactly it. He wanted to push Jonathan to his outer limits and make him go beyond those limits. And basically, at a young age, kind of show him that he could play through pain. He could play through, you know, physical discomfort and still perform at the top of his abilities. And that's something, I think they worked together for about 8 years when Jonathan was growing up, from about the time Jonathan was 7 till about 15. Before he left to go to Shattuck. It was kind of a remarkable thing. I talked to his parents and I asked his parents, like, you know, did you guys push him? What did you guys do when you were growing? He's like, no. They're like, no, he was just always like this. He was always motivated to go outside to the rink behind their neighborhood and shoot pucks, you know, through all hours of the night. His parents, you know, had to rein him in and bring him back in and say, hey, you need to go to sleep here. You know, you can't be out in the middle of the night shooting pucks here. The guy was just self-motivated. His parents, you know, said that they were hands-off for the most part, you know, and whatever he wanted to do, you know, however much he wanted to train and you know, hone his game, they were there to help him and support him.
That's, by the way, this is not Kevin Powell, Mark Carmen, or Chris Hines saying push your kids to the point that they could puke so that you'll make it in the NHL. Yeah. Make sure we're not endorsing that, but that's part of the story.
No.
Chris, you're there every day. Chris, you're there every day, and the year Patrick Kane has put together, he'll win the Hart Trophy likely as the league's MVP, putting up some incredible numbers. There's no question how important he is to this team, but really, and reading this, it brings it back to perspective on how important Jonathan Taves is to this team. What's he like with all the players? How do they respond to his leadership inside that locker room?
I really just think he is the ultimate lead by example guy, and you know, it sounds kind of cliche to say that, but I really do think that. Everybody sees how hard he works. Everybody sees how he takes care of his body, how he worries about his nutrition and obsesses over it. And I feel like that permeates throughout the locker room, because if guys don't try to match what he's doing, then I feel like they're letting down, or they feel like they're probably letting down the team. I think that's the biggest thing he can be a vocal guy and he'll get on guys when needed, or, you know, he'll encourage guys when they need it.
And he said he's kind of still learning the fine balance between that as he grows as a leader. But I think more so than anything, it's what he does that sets the tone in that room.
Well, it makes sense because Carm and I were kidding as we read this that you feel lazy after reading this. You know, the workouts he's done, how much he does to master his craft. And we're reading this like, man, I feel lazy. So I could totally get how his teammates could see what he does every day and be like, I can't let that guy down. You know, I got to step up my game a little bit.
He's kind of like a type A personality, and you read similar stories about you know elite athletes like this all the time, and it seems like he is one of those. You know, you hear stories about how competitive Michael Jordan was, and you know this guy. I just thought he's one of the most successful sports figures that Chicago has seen, and he's still only 27, about to be 28 years old. And, you know, I just kind of wanted to try and get at what makes him tick and what makes him want to be this way, I guess.
I like that you brought up Michael because, you know, in the Bulls exiting press conference that was done on Wednesday night, I mean, John Paxson was talking about leadership and Jimmy Butler. And he said, well, you know, I played with one of the greatest leaders of all time. He didn't say anything. He just led by example. Which, and Taze, I wouldn't like compare him to Michael, but I would compare him to like a Derek Jeter. He's never in trouble off the field. He's making tons of money. He's playing in a phenomenal city. He's winning championships. I mean, I think that's a fair comparison. But here, let's look at the series, all knotted up at one. A lot of people think the Blues are cracking, or at least they cracked last night. Do you get the sense in the Blackhawks locker room, in the room, so to speak, that they have a sort of an edge on St. Louis now?
I do. I definitely think, you know, getting that win on the road, you always kind of say you go into a road scenario in the first two games of a playoff series and say if you get a split, you're happy with that. I think in the Blackhawks case, that was definitely a bonus because I think now they are a little bit in St. Louis's head that they got on the road in a hostile atmosphere. The Blues were up 1-0, you know, in the series. They're up 1-0 in the game. And then I really think what kind of turned the tide psychologically was the Duncan Keith goal with about 4 seconds left in the second period. I think that was kind of a deflator for the Blues last night. You know, they were going to carry a 1-0 lead into the third period, and all of a sudden, at the last second, the Hawks tie it up. And yeah, I know that they almost took the lead on the replays, and that was on the Tarasenko's goal there, and that was a backbreaker as well. But I really think that Keith goal was a punch to the gut for them.
Didn't it feel? Carr mentioned that the Blues may be cracking. Now, to me, it seemed like they were in their own head before this series even started, especially with their head coach, Ken Hitchcock, who talked about the Blackhawks' resolve and their mentality and how they've been able to win championships, and his team needs that mentality, and then going on and on about how they need to hit the Hawks 70 times. And then yesterday after the game, he says, when you're playing the defending cup champions, you know, they're going to get some calls. It just seems like they are in their own head, and it all starts with Ken Hitchcock. Do you get that vibe from him and from the team?
Yeah, Ken, the last couple of days, Ken Hitchcock has had a lot of bluster when he's been meeting
really
with
has.
The media. The players actually have been more measured and reserved in their comments. You know,
right, that's what I mean. You haven't heard a ton of that from the players.
Exactly.
It's like Ken Hitchcock, your leader, your coach.
A lot of that.
Yeah.
Right, exactly. And like when he made that 70 hits comment, you know, you go to ask some of the players, and you're like, do you guys really need to get 70 hits? And they're like, well, we can step up the physicality, but we have to make sure that we don't go headhunting and, you know, just hitting guys for the sake of hitting guys, because then we're going to lose the puck. Like, the Blues were saying all the right things. Like, the players were saying all the right things. And I think Hitchcock, I don't know if part of it is a show or is trying to get into Blackhawks' head. I don't think it's going to work if it is, because the Blackhawks have seen, you know, everything over these last 7 years in the playoffs. Nothing's really going to get to them. We asked Joel Quenneville about Hitchcock's comments about the refs today, and you know, we basically said, you've been the defending, you know, cup champions three times. Have you ever felt like you've been getting the benefit of the calls? And I think Quenneville said, not at all, no. he's just not going to let any of this affect the Blackhawks.
Chris Hine from the Chicago Tribune about to move along here. So before you get out of here, Chris, and get to enjoy the rest of your Saturday. I mean, it's been a brutally physical series so far through two games. I mean, you got cross checks going all over the place. Nicholas Jalmerson's taking 17 shots all over his, you know, I mean, he's hobbling all over the place.
Yep.
And it, to me, like, is every game going to be 2-1, 1-0, 3-2? I don't see this series opening up at any point. Do you?
I think it might at some point. If you look at I don't know the numbers off the top of my head, but if you look at the Hawks' record, games 4-7 of playoff series, it's remarkable what they've done over the last few years. So sometimes it takes a little while for them to figure out what they need to do offensively or clamp down defensively against the team or to solve a goaltender. I point to that Ducks series last year where, Frederik Andersen, looked great in the first couple of games. And then all of a sudden game five rolls around and the Hawks start scoring on him. So I wouldn't be surprised if it does open up over these next couple of games. We'll see how it goes tomorrow.
Fair enough. Chris, great stuff. And you should buy your Chicago Tribune every Sunday, but you should especially buy it tomorrow to read the Jonathan Taves piece, not just online, but to have it sitting there at your breakfast table with your coffee and a Chris Hine just staring
at
it. That's a beautiful thing. We'll see you out at the United Center tomorrow, Chris.
Luckily, they won't have to see my face in the paper tomorrow. just my byline.
Chris, appreciate you as always.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Chris. Chris,
talk to you later.
Chris Hyen of the Chicago Tribune doing great work. I really have enjoyed his coverage this year and also...
does a great job.
Yep, and he's been...
it's a must-read if you're a hockey fan, if you're a Blackhawks fan, if you're a Jonathan Taves fan, if you like sports in general. And the long, long, long list, Carmen, and you've been a sports fan your whole life, the long list of idiot athletes is full, long, and in-depth. To see a player like Jonathan Taves mastering his craft, a lot of these players, you look at them and you hear them talk to the media and some of the comments they make, and it's like, wow, they fit the stereotypical jock. But Jonathan Taves, I think whatever he would have pursued as a profession, whether it was sports or something else, he would have been successful.
There's no doubt. He would have been the best mortgage broker there's ever been. If he was working for David Hochberg, Taves would be making more
pro
than
mortgage
Hochberg.
Plug.
No, there you go. All right. Coming back, we've got the North Side, South Side report. Cubs are about to wrap up at Wrigley. Baseball straight ahead, and then Sam Smith after 4 o'clock with a little Bulls postseason recap as well. 720 WGN.
Second hit of the day for Soler. Solid single. Majestic home run.
Jorge Soler going yard. Cubs are leading the Rockies 6-2. Highlight courtesy of Comcast Sportsnet. I'm Mark Carmen. He's Kevin Powell. This is The Beat. 720 WGN with you till 7 o'clock tonight. 312-981-7200 is our phone line and our text line. The North Side, South Side report sponsored by Vienna Beef, which is one of Kevin Powell's favorites.
Oh, yeah.
No doubt about that.
Polish sausage.
I got a little beef, though, with Joe Maddon. I hate to do this.
Yeah, it's interesting what he's done with his pitchers here. You said Arrieta came out to hit in the eighth, and then he brings in who to pitch? Travis Wood?
So Arrieta, another gem of a ball game as Arrieta.
Dominant. 8 innings, 5 hits, no runs, 8 strikeouts.
And he threw 100 pitches, of which I completely agree. Let me be clear here, and I hate second-guessing Joe Maddon, and this is a nitpick by me, but I'm going to do it. I completely agree with getting Maddon out of there, or getting Maddon out of there, getting Arrieta out of there. He's, you're up 6-0. There's no reason Travis Wood just gave up a 2-run homer. There's a 6-0 game going to the ninth. Save your bullets. It's April. The guy threw a ton of pitches last year. There's no reason to push him. But listen, you can't throw Travis Wood and Pedro Strop every single day. And I know they haven't pitched in a couple of days now, but if it's me, like, Strope pitched nearly every single day to start the season. Same thing with Wood. I mean, they were 4 games in. He had pitched in all 4, and Strope had pitched 3 of 4. This is a long season, man. You got a lot of guys down there that, A, you want to get work, and I know that people like to be sharp and they like to pitch, but it just seems to me early in the season, it's just a little too much of the same guys out of the bullpen for me. I don't know if you agree, but that's just... I always, that's the type of things that I pay attention to.
Well, I think the Cubs are blowing everyone out, He's got to give his bullpen some work, Carm. They can't just be sitting there,
Yeah, no,
Get them in there. Keep your starters fresh. Let the bullpen get some work.
Right, but use the entire roster. Give me some Justin Grimm. Give me a... Give me, I mean, I suppose they pitched.
Grimm was in Thursday night, got some work, and gave up a run. He spoiled his shutout.
I mean, I would have just used Grimm today. That would have been.
Anyways, Carlos Gonzalez homered off of Travis Wood. It's 6-2 right now. Cubs will likely move to 9-2. And the White Sox yesterday, Carm, Chris Sale throws an absolute gem against Tampa. The Sox win 1-0. They're 8-2 and first in the Central, Carm.
I mean, what were the odds? When's the last time that both Chicago baseball teams have started the season 8-2? Maybe our outstanding producer, Brett Jackson, can get on that. Both teams 8-2 to start the year. Incredible. And the White Sox are playing at Tampa. That's a 5-10 first pitch. So we'll be able to keep you up to date on some of that. By the way, Hector Rondon also on the warming up in the bullpen for Pedro Strop. So all three are all using their limbs today, which...
Trevor Story, by the way, who has 7 home runs in the team's, what, first 6 games, something like that. The rookie sensation for the Rockies says he was really excited to face Jake Arrieta. It was really cool. He's like, yeah, it'd be cool to face Arrieta. He had such a good year last season.
How'd he do
struck out 3 times against Arrieta. He doubled in the 9th here, but not a great showing for Story against Arrieta.
Yeah, the double coming off Travis Wood down the right field line. White Sox tonight with John Danks on the mound. Once again,
that's unfortunate.
Yeah, did not start the season great. Erasmo Ramirez for the Rays. All right, Sam Smith's going to join us to start the 4 o'clock hour, and then after that, we'll do a little Cubs post game wrap up on 720 WGN.
Gar and I both. I mean, we know that some changes need to be made. I mean, anybody who knows me knows that I'll go down with the group that fights before I'll go down with the group that. You know, that doesn't. So we need more of those type of guys, I can tell you that. We understand accountability, and we are accountable for what this team did this year. We don't run away from it. We accept it. That's on us, and we get it.
That is John Paxson on Wednesday night in the Bulls' end-of-season press conference. That was not expected to be Wednesday night, but it was, and... there were the thoughts of one of your Bulls leaders. Another one of your Bulls leaders is Sam Smith from Bulls.com. Maybe perhaps people would be more comfortable with Sam running the team than current general manager Gar Forman. Sam, you're not ready to step into that role, are you?
I am, but it hasn't been offered and hasn't been for the 35 years I've been waiting for it. So kind of feeling it's not going to happen.
Someday.
Well, never give up hope. And if there's anything I can do, Mark Harmon, Kevin Powell here at 720 WGN, you just let us know, Sam. So here, let's start at the top with where to from here. And I'll give you what I would do. And if Sam Smith was in charge, tell us what you would do and what do you think they'll do. If it's me, I think your best play right now is to keep Jimmy Butler and do everything you can to dismantle the roster around him. Because Jimmy's a great player, but he's not a player that's going to carry you to 40-plus wins by himself. So you keep your one part who's in his prime, and you try to build around him. By dismantling it, you're going to get a lottery pick, and then you have a whole lot of free agents coming available and a lot of cap space. Now, whether you get any of those guys, obviously that's a, you know, nobody knows the answer to that, and it's unlikely. But I think that's the most reasonable play right now, rather than trying to piece something together for next year. What would you do, Sam?
Well, I think it's hard the position you're in, because you're essentially what you're saying is, I'm going to keep Jimmy Butler, who's the only player on my team who has value in trade, and I'm going to try to get rid of all the other guys who don't have value in trade. So what exactly am I going to get for all those other guys? You're essentially saying Derrick Rose. There's no trades to be made for Derrick Rose with 1 year left on his deal, not making a commitment to sign beyond that. And with a history of injury, and no one's taken on $22 million on spec. It's just not happening. And so, you know, you have to deal. I mean, I know fantasies are fine, you know, when it comes to sports. So, you know what, trade this guy, trade that guy, trade that guy. But when guys have contracts and other teams actually want to compete as well, I mean, I know it would be nice if everybody was in a position to kind of help the Bulls. But, you know, they're not really looking at it that way. So if you're not trading Jimmy Butler, and I wouldn't at this point, because I think what you're doing if you do that is you're going back to like an early 2000s version of sort of rebuilding from the bottom up.
you know, with several years of lotteries and stuff like that. And I don't think anyone has a stomach for that at this point again. I think you're in position to keep those two guys, because I don't see that changing. I don't see why they can't play together. I think that was way overrated, this notion of they can't play together, they don't like each other, all this sort of stuff. First of all, Jimmy's not a guard. He's a forward. He's been playing out of position to accommodate the team because they haven't had other guards. But he shouldn't be a guard. He shouldn't have the ball in his hands. He should release up court and finish at the basket. That's what he does. When he stays back in the backcourt, he hurts the team because he hangs on to the ball. He walks up slowly. Part of that is to conserve his energy because he's out there 40 minutes. He's playing too long. Shouldn't be playing that much. And they have to fit yet a couple of other pieces. The bigger decision is, I think the only decision they have this summer, essentially, is whether to keep one center or no centers among Noah and Gasol. They they're both free agents, so they could both decide to leave. My guess is one would want to stay. And, you know, the Bulls situation is, well, you've got, you know, Felicio showed a little bit. He could be a backup. You know, maybe you can go get a athletic type of big man. I'm not saying specifically, but on the line of like a Plumlee type, you know, runs the court, athletic, not a big scorer. And then you'd have some cap room if you let both centers go. And what you need to me is what you need is a shooting guard, somebody who stretched the court. You know, Jimmy and Derek were the worst three-point shooting backcourt in the league. Your shooting guard, Jimmy, shot 31%. I haven't checked, but that's got to be either the worst or pretty close to it among shooting guards.
Yeah.
And Derek shot around 30%. And so the way the NBA is going now, that you can't survive that way. It's inconceivable. So you got to get him out of the backcourt. Got to move him up. You got to find a two guard, and you got to find some athletic guys who will attack the basket and run, you know, with the other guys and get everybody pushing the ball up, because they're still stuck in this Thibodeau walk it up thing too much. And the NBA is not playing that way. And so, even though it would kind of be a disappointment to some element of the fan base, you know, look at what happened today. Toronto loses pretty convincingly at home, first game to Indiana. And that's a team that the Bulls swept during the regular season. Cleveland is better than all these teams. I acknowledge that. They have issues, clearly, between LeBron and Love and LeBron and Irving. And I wouldn't be surprised if Cleveland doesn't win the title this season, if both Love and Irving are not with the team next season. So I think, you know, even though the Bulls missed the playoffs, which is bad, they're still not, even with the roster they've got, they're still not that far from all these other teams, Indiana and Boston and Toronto. And, you know, they're not better. The Bulls, you know, shot themselves in the foot with some of the things they did late in the season. Just that week, really, with New York and Orlando just really buried them. So at this point, even though the community would probably like to is panicked, I wouldn't be. I wouldn't overreact to everything that happened, and I would just try to put guys in better positions, be a little more demanding with them, and fill in a couple of spots.
Stuck with Sam Smith here talking Bulls. Sam, can Fred Hoiberg coach in this league, and is he the right man for this job?
Well, he's first-year coach. Brad Stevens, when he was the first-year coach of Boston, they won 25 games. And I'm sure some people in Boston were saying, no, you know, he's coming from college. Can, you know, he'd really coach in the NBA. So, and now the consensus, he's a pretty darn good coach, and a lot of teams would like to have him. So it's a transition. Yeah, I don't see any reason why Fred can't coach. He's played in the NBA. He's been executive in the NBA. He knows the NBA. I don't think, you know, resume-wise, you could question his knowledge or his success, in the sense that, you know, how many guys have that, you know, those various experiences. And so, yeah, I think he can. I think he's What gets overlooked, and nobody likes excuses, other than the injuries. I forget the injuries. Obviously, they had a tremendous number of injuries. But just take that out. What he was inheriting was a team on the way down. It was the end of a 5- and 6-year run, under Tom Thibodeau, and also, with Derrick Rose post-injury and then trying to come back and doing a pretty good job, really, I think. I think having an amazing season after 3 knee surgeries, opening with a facial fracture, finishes up playing, basically as many games as basically almost anybody on the team. I think, Gasol or Gibson missed about 10 games and Derek missed about 15. So, based on this season, it was a big advance. So, as far as Fred goes, he was handed a, quote, bad hand in the sense of he was the one assigned to write it down, to finish it out, to see what, like John said, we thought they had 1 year left in them. And we wanted to see, give them a chance to show if they had 1 year left. Well, they showed they don't. So now,
clearly,
now it has to be fixed. But to make a judgment on Fred at this point, wouldn't be appropriate in my view, because I think he has the knowledge and ability to coach. And I don't think it's appropriate to measure him on this group, which was not his group. It's like a college coach coming into a new program. It's not his recruits. And so, give him a chance. And clearly, he backed up. He had this idea of where he wanted to play. And Gasol and Butler basically came to him and said, "We can't play that way. You've got to call plays for us. We got to play slower and call more plays for us." So he did. So he tried to accommodate his players, and you could say maybe he shouldn't have, but he was trying to figure out the best way to succeed.
Right. I mean, I actually think he absolutely should have. Fred Hoiberg, in my mind, Sam, doesn't have the right to be like, "Hey, run my system." I mean, Pat Riley run with the – I'm not trying to compare him to Pat Riley, but he won with the Showtime Lakers, and he won with the grind-you-down New York Knicks. I mean, just to say that you're going to play whatever system he's running just because that's, in his mind, I just don't think he'd earn that to this point. But here, look, forget about Fred for a second. Sam Smith from Bulls.com with us. Can you explain – the Gar Foreman, how he got here and why he's so safe? I mean, I think a lot of people like to pick on Gar, yet somehow, some way, this guy has figured out how to move up within the organization from starting as a scout and Tim Floyd bringing him up to being, one of the longest tenured people there. And despite, he's gained John Paxson, Jerry Reinsdorf, Michael Reinsdorf's trust. I mean, what has he done so well behind the scenes that fans don't see? Because I think a lot of people would love to see Gar move along.
Well, I could flip that another way. Why, based on what's happened, under his tenure, would you want him to move along? He was, a couple of years ago, was executive of the year, voted by his peers, not the media. So, that's a substantial, that's an substantial acknowledgement of production success, whatever you want to call it. So, what year did he win that? It was 2011. So, 4 or 5 years ago, he was executive of the year. The team has missed the playoffs once this year, first time. Since he's basically, been in this role. So why would you, I would flip it around and ask you, why after somebody's had, hired Tom Thibodeau, who turned out to be a coach of the year, used these picks in the 20s, which are almost, I wouldn't say useless, but very limited, and to come up with Jimmy Butler, an all-star, with a pick in the 30. Mirotić, 23.
Tony Snell.
Tom Gibson, 26. And now this season, get, from the scrap heat, and this actually, 29 teams turned down Felicio. And he and the Bulls invited him to Summer League and signed him after that, after everybody turned him down, and he was on his way back to Brazil. And then, not that I would favorite, I would have rather seen Kirk Heinrichs next day. But, you know, he got something out of that deal with Holiday, who's, you know, had a nice finish to the season. You know, but particularly those draft picks in the 20s where you can fill your roster and get, you know, build your bench on picks in the 20s is almost unheard of in the NBA. And to get your best player, you know, on some view as a pick in the at 30, you would say, if I told you it wasn't Gar Foreman and I just named all those things he had done and had made the playoffs every season and the team had a winning percentage over 60% since he's been with the team, would you hire that guy to be your GM?
No,
you
make a compelling case, but they also traded up two draft picks to get Doug McDermott, who looks to me like he's at best a rotational player at 7, 8, 9 on your bench. They drafted Tony Snell. They passed on, a lot of people passed on Draymond Green, but they were one of them. They never adequately put a backup point guard behind Derrick Rose, which is a pure negligence to me. I mean, the guy can barely stay on the court. I mean, you can go back in time, so.
I'll interrupt you because I'll say you have to, if you're judging that way, you know, in hindsight on draft picks, I would ask you to do it with every team in the league and tell me which team. Now, remember, Golden State picked somebody else before they picked Draymond Green. They had no idea either. And if they liked him, why did they pick Festus Ezeli 10, 12 picks before him? And so they were just picking 30 teams. So that's irrelevant, Draymond Green. That's like Dennis Rodman in the second round. You fell into it, and you had no idea either. And they had no idea either. They weren't targeting him. And if you examine, you know, I mean, you know, Jerry West, when he was running, you know, Memphis, picked Drew Gooden with the fourth pick in the draft. That's a very inexact science. If you want to rate, and I'm fine, I agree, Tony Snell is not working out and is not going to work out. But if you got to rate the entirety of it against what everybody else does, and tell me who else has taken 3 or 4 picks in the 20s and turned them into manageable players. You know, you mentioned McDermott, and I still think he'll be fine when he gets in a situation with a team that passes the ball more. But so look at the picks they traded for him. You know, the Denver got those Gary Harris and somebody else.
Zach Levine?
You know, would that make much difference if they would you go back? I'd still make that trade versus getting Gary Harris and whichever big guy they got. They got 3 big guys, 7-footers, and they're looking to trade 1 or 2 of them now this summer anyway. So it's not like he gave up something great. McDermott maybe hasn't worked out as great, but I'll still take a guy who can shoot like that. I just want to put him in position where he gets more shots.
Sam Smith, you're the best. I'm going to stop doing the show and just call you off air and continue this discussion for the
Wait till we talk plenty after the games. You should be taping those things when we have our post-game discussions.
I do. It's in my pocket. I didn't want to let you know. Sam, I hope to talk to you soon, my friend. Enjoy your summer. We'll see you soon.
All right, thanks.
Sam Smith, yeah, Bulls.com. I have had many, many conversations with Sam Smith. You're live over there. Are you okay with that?
I'm good. Yeah, okay. That was a lot to digest.
Sam's the best. They got a lot of issues. We're going to have to go back and forth on Gar. All right, moving along from that, there is a huge Bulls issue that we have to get to, and it revolves around.
Yeah, we missed the top Bulls story here, and we had Sam Smith on the line to talk about it. Gar, right. We need to get to that.
Right, that's the mascot, which we'll do after this. And we have our Cubs postgame coming up. Cubs winner out at Wrigley, White Sox playing at 5. This week on Chicago's Best, Brittany and Elliot are popping tops at the best BYOB spots around town. Tune in to Chicago's Best Sunday night at 10 on WGN-TV. The Search for Benny the Bull next, 720 WGN.
Back to the Beat.
Benny!
All right, the whole show has been an appetizer to this point.
This is the main course.
So if you're just joining us, consider yourself privileged to be getting really into the meat of it. I'm Mark Harmon. He is Kevin Powell. This is The Beat with you till 7 on 720 WGN, getting you up to date on what's going on in the sports world. Cubs winner at Wrigley, 6-2, now 9-2 on the year. First time they're 9-2 since 1985. And the 8-2 White Sox will play the Rays tonight. That first pitch in about a half an hour. Sox coming in 8-2 for the first time since 1982. This is the land of baseball. But if you missed the story yesterday, it came out late in the afternoon, I got a text, right?
Yeah.
Benny the Bull is hanging it up.
Yeah. You got the breaking news alert on your phone, the text message.
I mean, I stopped what I was doing.
You were saddened.
I was.
You were stunned.
Barry Anderson is his name.
Legend.
He's the Bulls' manager of entertainment, but is, you know, he's actually, I mean, he's Benny the Bull. And he posts on his Facebook page, which is incredible. After 12 incredible years, it's come time for me to explore this world, this life, without my fuzzy red friend. In what's been an impossibly difficult choice to make, I've decided that June 30th will be my final day at the Chicago Bulls, where my heart will forever live. Barry Anderson, Benny the Bull, hanging up. The Bulls, from the Tribune, says confirmed they offered Anderson, who was named the NBA's Mascot of the Year in 2015, a contract, but the mascot is moving on.
So you know how they retire jersey numbers? Are they going to retire his costume, or how does this work?
Well, I think Anderson should. I mean, I think it's
a Hall of Fame mascot.
The guy's been incredible, and let's be honest. There's points in time where I think that Benny's been a little over the top. Like the popcorn.
Popcorn is a bit much. That's a whole lot of popcorn he's dumping on the fans.
Yeah, A, you're wasting a ton of popcorn. Like, you haven't been to a Bulls game. I mean, Benny will take like two huge garbage bag full of popcorn, and then he just walks down like he's stumbling and then dumps it all over the fans. I mean, A, if I'm sitting there, I don't want popcorn all over me.
It's a classic move. Free popcorn.
And then now we've wasted all this corn. And then the other side of it is the dude goes around with that confetti sprayer.
Right.
And he's just like harassing people.
Yeah.
And, you know, I know that he's also, like, taking shots at, like, people on Twitter. Like, he's gone at writers, and then
He's an aggressive mascot. There's no denying that.
I mean, the dude, it was a little over the top, but, I mean, I think he's going to be missed. Emotions, 312-981-7200, and we have a very important question for you. And you can speculate here. What do you think Benny does next? I mean, clearly from that quote, Kevin, he's not sure where he's going.
Right. I think he may have been inspired by Adam LaRoche, and he's flying to Southeast Asia as we speak to go undercover and save girls from sex slavery in brothels in Southeast Asia.
Well, and
that's my hunch. All right. I'm just speculating here, but that's what I'm rolling with. Benny the Bull, inspired by Adam LaRoche, going undercover Southeast Asia, sex slavery, brothels.
It's come time for me to explore this world. That would be exploring. Mm-hmm. This life, that would be doing something extremely important without my fuzzy red friend. I mean, this is a huge part of Barry Anderson's life. And he has to, I mean, there's got to be separation anxiety, you would think, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I've heard through the grapevine that when Barry Anderson goes out, women,
they love the Barry Anderson?
They are so interested in talking to Barry Anderson, like more so than any Bulls player, or certainly like anybody in the media.
Barry Anderson, getting it done.
Well, he's got the incredible, you know, he's got the dance moves, right?
He can move. Great move. He can do the no-look, half-court, underhand basketball shot and makes it like half the time.
His last moment, or one of his last moments as a mascot on Wednesday night versus the Sixers, if you were there, you were a very privileged person. We didn't know at the time that it was Anderson's last game, but it was. And they had a promotion with one of the fans where if Benny/Barry hit the, you know, his back is to the basket, he's at half court, and he heaves it over his shoulder. If that goes in, this guy was walking away with, I forget what the prize was, I think it was two airline tickets on United or whatever it was. And nothing but net on, like, try three. And then he booted the ball into the stands. And, I mean, that's how Barry Anderson goes out, drilling his final shot at the United Center.
Do you think Gar Pax had anything to do with this? Another poor move by management forcing Benny the Bull out? Is that a possibility, Carm? What are your sources telling you?
It's interesting. 312-981-7200. What is the real story behind Benny the Bull leaving? Opportunity for you on the phone line and the text line. And we'll take the best suggestion of what Benny should do next. We will give you a $25 gift card to Lou Malnati's if you come up with what we deem the best suggestion of what Benny should do next. And we also, by the way, if you want to raise your hand, nominate yourself to be the next Benny, I mean, the search has got to be on, right?
The search is on. I will speculate that he was inspired by Adam LaRoche. He's undercover in Southeast Asia. trying to save girls from sex slavery in Southeast Asia. I'm speculating there. There's also rumors he may have been forced out by Garpax.
Well,
and from 312 has a suggestion here. The texts are coming in for what Benny the Bull should do next. From 312, he should be hired as Trump's new campaign mascot. After all, he and Trump have one thing in common, and the word begins and ends with the letter or with the word bull.
Well
done, 312.
That's an interesting angle. Maybe, you know, Benny slash Barry could jump on the campaign here. Things have been very interesting, clearly. You ever...
Benny the Bull's better than that.
Benny the Bull is better than that.
You know?
That's exactly right. If Benny the Bull was going to go politics, he's not going with Trump, but apparently that's gaining momentum here on the show. 312-981-7200. What should Benny do next? Dave in Decatur has joined 720 WGN. Go ahead, Dave.
Well, you stole my thunder. That's what I was going to say. Trump's running mate. What a better way to spread the bull.
Yeah, what makes Benny the Bull a quality running mate with Donald Trump in your eyes, Dave?
Well, I don't think Trump is a quality presidential candidate anyway, so why not?
Yeah.
Well, if he was going to do that, Dave, though, would he do it with the red furry mask or would he just do it as himself?
I think he'd have to get his own uniform because the Bulls probably have a license on the Bull uniform.
Right. I mean, that's we got a logistical situation here. Dave, good suggestion. Appreciate you. 312.
All right, have a great day.
Yep, you too. 312-981-7200. I'm also curious, like, best Benny moments.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is a guy, maybe I'm wrong here, but I don't think I am. He has resonated with this city. 12 years.
The last 12 years, Carm.
I mean, when he does the bang the drum to get you going in the fourth quarter, you know, he's on the middle of the court and he's sitting there and he's getting it rolling.
Or when he's waving the flag at midcourt. Carm, so you say he does well in the lady department.
I've never seen that in action, but that is what I've heard,
from
yes.
From the 847, it says, it doesn't hurt that Barry is eye candy, and that draws the ladies. Wow.
Ooh. Well, I mean, you can definitely tell that Barry's got... you know, physically, he's a very strong Barry. You can't leap through the air like he does, do all the dance moves that he does, and, I mean, the personality's got to be there, right?
Yeah. 815 suggesting Benny should help the nuns convert the strippers. He's probably got the in with the strippers. He's the ladies' man. He knows them a little bit.
That's a little too noble, I think, for Benny.
Yeah, maybe the Trump mascot thing may be a better fit.
I don't see that. I think this is a huge... I mean, if you're the Bulls...
Well, Carm...
Do you try to duplicate this guy?
Carm, you're the Bulls guy around here. You're a fan of the Bulls. You've been a fan of the Bulls, a diehard most of your life. But you also cover it in the somewhat journalistic way as the press. In your eyes, as a fan, as a respected Bulls coverage journalist, beat reporter guy, what do you want from the next mascot at the United Center for the Bulls?
Well, I just think it's key that you
bring the energy.
Right. I mean, you got to carry on the legacy that Barry's left. I think there's, you know, as we move forward, I mean, you look at Kobe Bryant retiring this week, right? I mean, he imitated Michael.
Right.
And then he incorporated some of his own stuff. Like, he could shoot the three a little bit better than Mike. And maybe he took out, you know, some of the things that wasn't advantageous. I think, you know, Benny, to me, was always a little bit too much in the face of the fans. I think you can make that move. But then you got to have your own level of creativity. 224 texting, he should just put himself out to stud. That's very 224. You're in the running here for our Lou Malnati's winner. What should Benny do next? 312-981-7200. The Midwestern University Multifamily Medicine Clinic and Physical Therapy Institute offers comprehensive women's health care. From preventive medicine to health maintenance, including screenings and rehabilitation, you will receive quality care from a team of highly qualified faculty and students. Also offering the Speech Language Institute, Dental Institute, and Eye Institute at their multi-specialty clinic in Downers Grove. Learn more at MWUClinics.com or call 630-743-4500. That's MWUClinics.com or 630-743-4500. The Midwestern University Clinic, your family's home for healthcare. The search for the next destination for Benny the Bull continues. Mm-hmm. 720 WGN. It's emotional. We're with you. 720 WGN. This is The Beat. I'm Mark Harmon. He's Kevin Powell. Benny the Bull is retiring.
A legend moving on.
Barry Anderson, 12 years in the costume.
And we're speculating here. What's next for Benny the Bull? Carm, what did you say, Carm? What's next for Benny the Bull?
I haven't decided yet. Honestly, it's over my head. It's above my pay grade. The man that talented, I can't tell him what to do. What would I, if I was, to be honest, I'm hoping that Benny reconsiders. Michael retired and came back.
Oh, comeback part two.
Yeah.
To
me.
The drama unfolding in front of us.
Right. I mean, I think Benny, you know, maybe a year off, a year away, there's a lot of pressure being the mascot and the team has gone south.
Yeah.
And maybe Benny feels, you know, slightly responsible. Perhaps he ruffled Tom Thibodeau's feathers, you know, one time the wrong way. And
the Bulls haven't won a championship as him as the mascot, I'm just saying. I'm going with he's dedicating the rest of his life to fighting sex slavery, inspired by Adam LaRoche. He's going undercover now. So I'm going with that. I'm speculating here.
312-981-7200. What should Benny the Bull do next, and what will you miss most about Benny the Bull? Our best suggestion will win $25 to Lou Malnati's. Mary, you are on 720 WGN. Hello, Mary.
Hi, how are you?
We're great, Mary. A little emotional. I'm sure you are, too.
I'm not that emotional. I think you've confused the character Benny the Bull with Barry Anderson. Benny the Bull's still going to be there. Somebody else will be inside that costume. Maybe somebody younger, maybe somebody more inventive, maybe something else. I manufacture mascots here in the Chicago area. We do a lot of work for all of the Chicago teams.
Really?
And there's a lot of turnover in the performers. So
a 12-year run by Barry Anderson's pretty impressive then.
It is pretty impressive, but what does that mean? These people are athletes. They have to have the top of the line bodies to be able to do that. I mean, imagine that you have to take that shot off that trampoline, and you're wearing that head, and you're wearing that whole upper body suit. We have to design and engineer those things so they can do all of the athletics that they have to do and not injure themselves. And I'm telling you, some of them do get injured, and some of them don't come back from those injuries as well as they'd hoped they would.
For a costume, what do you call it? A mascot costume, or is that what you're saying? You make those?
Yeah, they're professional mascot costumes.
Okay, so how much time does it take to make one of those? What does it cost for a costume like that?
Well, it's pretty much across the board, but anywhere from maybe $5,000 up to $15,000.
Whoa!
It depends on how intricate it is. And when you look at, for instance, Benny the Bull, because he's one of our clients, you look at him and you see a costume, but he owns many, that the team owns many more than just one costume.
Okay.
For instance, when you see him do the dunking, that's a specific head that's designed with a lot more visibility, a lot more lightweightness, so that he can actually see what he's doing.
Wow.
Wherever the vision is, wherever the airflow comes from. So, and because if you go up to Benny the Bull, you really want to feel good about it. You don't want to have this locker room odor following you around as you might well sweat a lot if you put on one of these furry suits and started running around. So you have to change several times during a game.
Well, we're getting texts in here like people are saying that Barry's the best athlete on the team, and you know you're in the.
I agree. He is, and I've met the man. I've worked with him. He's quite athletic. He's quite good, but he's not as young as he used to be.
We hear Barry's quite the ladies' man. Can you confirm that he's easy on the eyes?
I got to tell you, and certainly I'm. Could be his mother, but workplace, I have to
remain professional.
My young girls away. I have to keep them away when he comes.
Right?
Wow!
I'm telling you, this guy is maybe he just has too much of that going on, so he's got to changing his focus.
Well, you can never have too much of that going on. Well, I don't think anybody there.
God bless you, Mary. hang on one second here before you go, because you're clearly the preeminent expert on this. You're making it out like you're almost like Max Mercy in The Natural. People remember that. You're like the reporter saying that they come and they go, they come and they go. But yet, here's a phenomenal athlete. I don't know if you can
be regarded for that. I agree.
But you make it seem like somebody can just jump in there and do what he does. I don't know if that's true, Mary.
I think you'd be surprised how often you think it's Barry Anderson in that suit when it's not on some of those.
Oh, breaking. Mary, breaking news here.
Mary, you hang on, Mary. We gotta take care of you because this is...
That's why I love this radio station. We're talking about a ridiculous topic. We get an actual expert on mascots, as Mary calls in. This is hilarious.
Mary,
love our listeners.
Mary, great call.
Okay, thank you.
That's Mary the mascot maker.
630 just texting. Barry's a friend, and yes, he's a stud. Good for Barry.
Yeah, Barry is like by far the most valuable bull. Mary in Beach Park has a thought. Mary, you're on.
Hi, guys, are you posting his picture online so we can all see? Huh?
we'll try to track it down for you, Mary.
Okay. Hey, you know, I don't know, but you know, there's a little time left. Those tax preparation places, you know, maybe it could be put something above that bull, put tax bull, you know, might be.
There we go.
That's not
something good.
Well, that's not bad too. Like you, if you go like, you know, in my neighborhood corner, like Western and Lawrence, you'll see the guy out there who's trying to get you to come in and do your taxes. Maybe Barry could, you know, jump in there. That's probably be a pay cut for him.
Sure could.
But he'd be good at that.
Yeah. Thank you, Marie.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
630 texting in. Benny the Bull will dedicate his retirement to finding Clark the Cubs' pants. Clark, get some pants, man. He's walking around just with a Cubs jersey on and a hat.
That is a phenomenal look that Clark the Cub just goes full on no pants.
214, Benny will now be a greeter at Walmart.
Yeah, Benny's big time. The guy was like making six figures plus, supposedly. I mean, this dude was pouring in the dough. Where's he going to go to make that dough and be Benny the Bull? This is a tough day for Barry and company.
630 texting in again. This guy's bringing the heat today, by the way. Benny the Bull should be a political pundit on Fox News, cutting through the bull.
Cutting through the bull. Benny the Bull. All right, well, I feel better. Do you feel better?
Someone also says from the 773, I truly can't tell if this entire mascot conversation is serious. Are you guys just pulling our legs? I'm just having fun, 773.
No, but
breaking news here.
But it's also serious. I mean, Barry's been a staple of the team, and we wanted to give him respect. And he is retiring. I mean, that's a real story. It's on every news outlet out there. I think ESPN's going to lead with it on SportsCenter tonight. 720 WGN.
Back to the beat.
You know what golf's good for? It's good for going to bed. It's good for taking a nap. It's good for, and that's where golf comes into play. I do not understand how people could sit down for 4 hours of golf. Well, hold on a second. Am I really wrong that the Masters gets great ratings? I have not checked. I'm willing to be wrong. I don't think I am. Adam Hoge is the only person watching the Masters. How come that's the first thing in the search? It is an elite group of people that are watching golf. I think
you're an idiot.
Like people will say like soccer's boring and like okay, then I'm like if you don't like watching soccer, that's cool, but it's a great sport. But if you say like golf is exciting, then you're just like wrong. Those were the thoughts of me, Mark Harmon. Nobody else at the radio station. Put together by the great Brett Jackson, producing the program. Shout out to my guy Mike Jacobson, by the way, who's driving back from Madison, Wisconsin. Drive home safe, Jackal. Come back and be the best Jackal you can be, as we all know you will be. I'm Mark Carman. He is Kevin Powell. This is 720 WGN. Our phone number is 312-981-7200. The Cubs, a winner today. By the way, thanks to everybody with the deep, heartfelt thoughts around Benny the Bull. I know it's tough for the city to lose an icon. I mean, we lost Michael, Walter Payton back in the day, Frank Thomas, Bobby Hall, Stan Mikita. I mean, Benny the Bull, he's not quite on that level. But as far as mascots go, I mean, he's light years in front of Clark the Cub, who's not even on the landscape. He crushes Southpaw. He's bigger than Tommy Hawk. I mean, that's just, I mean, really, when you talk about the landscape of this city mascot-wise, there is no bigger than Benny the Bull. I mean, Willie the Wildcat's had a great run, and many prominent people, even the great Craig Sager, who we sent prayers out to.
Yes.
I mean, he was Willie the Wildcat. That's a, you know, great Chicago mascot. But Benny is number one, and I thought that the texts and the calls were...
Yeah, 815 suggesting he'll be on Dancing with the Stars. He has moves. Barry Anderson has it all.
Yeah, so, you know, we just wanted to...
Like, if we're scouting mascots, he's a potential first-round pick. Sorry about that. They totally put way too much coffee in your cup.
No,
just spilled all over himself. He's a bona fide top pick in the mascot draft.
I didn't even know that I did that. All right, but so I just wanted to give thanks for what I thought was a very heartfelt tribute by everybody here on 720 WGN. And thank you for pulling
did
me.
Did you acknowledge that I just walked in?
No, I didn't. I had you on. Kevin Powell was just getting quick coffee.
I don't know if it's because it's the weekend, but man, are people moving slow today?
See,
that was not a fun coffee run.
Well, you should have aborted. It would have been okay.
I was about to, but I've already paid for everything.
Oh, well, okay. Anyway.
You owe me $2.40, by the way.
$2.40 coming your way. Brett Jackson, you owe me $2.40, so just throw that along to Kevin Powell. All right, moving along here. So the Cubs win again today. I was at the game yesterday. You've been in the new clubhouse. Thoughts on the new clubhouse? Kevin Powell's reaction to...
Well, we did the media tour on Tuesday, the full unveiling on Tuesday to the media. Wednesday and Thursday, I was out there for the game. So I was in there after the games with the players, and it's unbelievable. It's like a nightclub in there, and the players are blasting music. They have state-of-the-art everything. But the clubhouse does feel that the locker room area, especially when the players were in it, it feels almost too big. Like, all the players are so far from each other, and there's so much open space. They have, like, in the middle, it's a big circle, the locker room. In the middle, there's, like, chairs and sort of a little mini lounge area. I haven't seen one player using that. I don't know if they go to the player lounge. Like, there's an actual player hangout where there's video games and TVs and ping pong and all that stuff. It's unbelievable. It's 30,000 square feet, state-of-the-art everything. We went into the trainer's room where some of the technology they have in there, it looks like it's from the future. It's all kinds of crazy things.
Well, you just got to give Tom Ricketts credit, bottom line. You go back in time, nobody thought that the Cubs would ever do the full teardown like they did. And there was a thought around the franchise that you can't do that. The fandom won't support it. Yeah. And I was all, and not to pat myself on the back, which could get exhausting at times for me, but I always thought, yes, of course the Cubs franchise will support it. We've been supporting it for 100+ years. Mm-hmm. Go to the bottom and build it right for right. once. And
well, because they had initially, they talked about putting it sort of in that same vicinity where the old clubhouse was and trying to find ways to build it there. And then they finally just said, well, forget it. They built a tunnel. It's about a 60-second walk from the dugout. You got to go down some stairs through a tunnel, and that takes you to the clubhouse. They dug a giant hole across the street at Clark and built this massive clubhouse. But it does feel kind of almost, like I said, almost too big, the clubhouse. I mean, the players are like way on the other side of the room.
Yeah, and the clubhouse is part of it, but I'm just talking about the whole thing.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that you went and you lost big for 3 straight years and you drafted...
But doesn't it feel like this whole process, you know, everyone's like, okay, they're going to break it down, rebuild from the bottom up. Didn't it feel like this came along a lot quicker than expected? I mean, last year, nobody thought that was going to happen. And then now, it's like if they don't win the World Series this year, I mean, that's a letdown.
Right. And that's the thing. It did. It happened way faster.
A lot faster than everyone anticipated. I think Jake Arrieta's emergence, you weren't expecting that. I mean, he completely turned his career around, and now he's one of the best pitchers in baseball.
Well, that was the trade that really put them over the top.
Yeah,
I mean, you're talking about dealing, you know, at the time, a player that you weren't keeping, who's now, I can't believe, as I get older here, my names flip out of me.
That's what Google's for, Carm.
It was the random pitcher who went to the Astros. He was here for half a season. You flipped him and Steve Clevenger, the backup catcher. Who am I thinking of? You'll have it in a second. For Jake Arrieta.
Right.
Who, remember, when he came here, Arrieta was first sent to the minors, and then he came up later in the season, and they were trying to rebuild the guy back up. That type of trade was a trade that, under Jim Hendry and regimes before that, they never, outside of the Sammy Sosa fleecing with George Bell, which also helped the White Sox for one season, those deals never happened. You never were you flipping worthless veterans or right. barely have value veterans. I'll call them completely worthless. Who's the guy that I was talking about?
So you traded, the Orioles traded Arrieta and Pedro Strop for Scott Feldman and Steve Clevenger.
Yeah, Scott Feldman.
In 2013.
I mean, we're talking about Scott Feldman, who the Orioles bought in on for their playoff run, right. and who was a fourth, fifth starter, yeah. and you spun that guy, and throw Strop in there too, which is ridiculous. That's your, if it's not your best reliever, it's your second best. Those trades didn't happen. And then, you know, we don't have to... I mean, everybody knows the whole story as far as drafting Bryant and drafting Schwarber, yes, and signing Soler. And mm-hmm. I mean, they've...
Trading for...
Addison Russell.
Yes.
Who I, at the time, I'm like, really? You're going to get rid of Samardzija? You need pitching. Somebody's got to pitch.
They got one of the best young players in the league.
Right. It was an...
Everything has come together.
So, it's unbelievable.
It's crazy. It's here. Now, this team doesn't have many, if any, holes. Before the season, I think you and I were talking, Carmen. We're looking up and down this roster. Offensively, the pitching. It's like, where's the weakness, right? I still can't really find one. But, if we are going to break down this team a little bit and analyze the entire roster, I think going forward, I don't know, maybe you add another arm to the bullpen, you know, a veteran, a bullpen guy, or maybe a back-end rotation. Hamill, who is notorious for strong starts in the first half of his season, sort of dwindles in the second half, but like we saw last year. But Hamill sort of is trying to reinvent himself a little bit. He did all sorts of off-season work. He's looked very good so far. Hendricks has looked good. You may not even need to add a starter towards a back-end starter. I mean, you have pretty much every piece to the puzzle here.
Right. I mean, it's early here. We're at 11 games in.
And that's what I'm saying. That's why I'm trying not to drool all over this team, and I am trying to find some weaknesses or a hole here or there, and I really can't find one.
Right, and it's not there right now. And here's the other thing. They didn't trade Soler. They didn't trade Baez. They have a ton in the minors. So if they do need to add something, if something falters,
just move a piece.
They're
and I thought Soler could have been a piece. They if they needed to add something, whether it been a pitcher or whatever it was, I thought Soler could have been a potential trade piece. But now with Schwarber out, I don't think Soler's going anywhere.
No.
Now that you can't platoon Schwarber out in left field. What are your thoughts on Chris Bryant at third base?
2-for-4, by the way, Jorge Soler today, now hitting .250, and Soler hit a home run today. His second on the season, came in the fourth. Also going yard, Dexter Fowler, a 3-run shot, and Anthony Rizzo, his third homer on the season. What are my thoughts on
Chris Bryant didn't play well yesterday at third base. Is he too tall? He's a large man. No, seriously, that's a question that's been asked. Is he too tall for a full length of a career to be playing a position that demanding defensively?
I'm not moving Bryant off a third right now, but I do love that he's got flexibility, can play left, can play right, and he also played center back in the day. It's rare that you see the play that he made yesterday, which was throwing the ball down the right field line, and then he also booted a routine little nothing dribbler that Kevin Powell, Mark Harmon, Brett Jackson, we generally make that play. But I don't lack confidence with him at third base. I really don't. I'd pick up that baseball. I don't know if my throw would be accurate. 312-981-7200. Have we settled into that the Cubs are the favorite to win the World Series? Are we there? Are we living a different life? I'm curious where people are at with it. 312-981-7200. There was one issue that I did find. I wouldn't call it an issue. Just one thing that I noticed being at the ballpark yesterday that I want to talk about coming back here that was kind of perplexing. Wrigley Baseball and Sunday afternoon. Kevin Powell's going to be there. Three things that go together like Russell, Bryant, and Rizzo. It's the Cubs. It's the Rockies. It's Sunday at 1 on WGN TV. 312-981-7200. Little Cubs talk on the beat. 720 WGN.
He's already seen Rizzo.
Glenn Casper, Comcast Sportsnet. This is 720 WGN. This is the beat. Cubs winner today over the Rockies, 6-2. Now 9-2.
So Rizzo had a homer. He needed that.
Rizzo.
Did you have your Rizzos this morning, Carm?
Have you? I've never had.
He's got his own cereal now.
I heard they're flying off the shelves. The Rizzos.
It's probably one of those things you buy and just put on the. It's a sports memorabilia at this point, right? Is anybody buying them because they really want to taste the cereal?
Looking for a review on the Rizzos. 312-981-7200. Review the cereal. Food at the park is better this year.
Yeah, I went and I was out there Wednesday night, and I walked over. By the way, the hot dog stand couldn't be farther from the press box. Complete opposite sides of the park.
That's a good strategy. Media does not need easy access to hot dogs.
No. So I made a long walk. Thursday, I decided I did not want to make that long walk again. I might do it tomorrow, though. It's going to be a nice day. I tried the, what is it called, the Berry Foot. Have you had hot dogs? You familiar with hot dogs?
Hot dogs is in my neighborhood. Yes, I'm very familiar, although I think I've gone like twice in my life. I mean, I'm not
going to... But look, it's closed now, the actual hot dog stand. Yeah. It was legendary, and people obsessed over it.
And the hot dog stand that tried to replace hot dogs, I believe, is now out of business, and it's in the same spot. So
you never want to follow a legend.
No,
anyways,
bad idea.
They opened a hot dog stand at Wrigley Field. I believe it's going to be rotating different varieties throughout the season. Right now, they have three offerings. One's the Berry Foot, which I tried. It's a corned beef-based sausage.
Mm-hmm.
You've got a Russian dressing on the top.
Okay.
A little sauerkraut and a little shaved Swiss cheese.
Did you like it?
It was all right. It was good, but my issue with it was the Russian dressing.
Uh-huh.
Way too close to ketchup, Carm. Way too close to ketchup. It had a little ketchup flair to it. They also offer up like a pull of sausage.
Doesn't this
which, if I'm going to go to a baseball game and eat a pull of sausage, just go to the cell. I mean, it's not going to be better than the cells. Nice try, though, hot dogs. And then there's some curry-based sausage I tried that was no good. Not in my wheelhouse, Carm.
Correct me if I'm wrong. You just said that you had three dogs in one day?
No, I haven't had the Polish yet, and I only had a couple bites from a friend's curry sausage.
You went shared dog?
I went because my buddy was out there, so I was walking over there. I go, hey, what's up? He goes, I got the curry sausage from hot dogs. I'm like, well, I want to try all three. So he's like, here, try some. So I took a little, broke off a little piece.
You went break off and not straight at it?
I lied. I bit it.
You bit
it. I thought it would sound better if I said I broke off a little piece of this hot dog.
See, this is a worthy conversation.
Yes.
If you're going to share a hot dog with your buddy.
Right. I just bit it, to be honest.
See, that ruins the whole dog for me. Like, I can't eat it after you've
I kind of went savage move and just grabbed it and bit it, and he was kind of just looked at me like, all right. But it's curry-based. It was not... I'm not a big fan. But the Russian one was the Berry Foot. Try it out.
Okay.
Pretty good. Hot dog, center field bleachers if you're looking for them.
Well, I'm out there yesterday and with the great Patty Vasquez.
Patty V.
We're having a good time. But I'm looking around the park, and it's just kind of interesting. I know it's early, but this is the best team in baseball. It's not sold out yesterday.
Really?
What
are you thinking? I thought I read 34,000.
Yeah, so they're 6,000 short of a sellout. And there's sections where the seats clearly, you know, four of them, not sold. Upper level of the terrace, not sold.
On a Friday?
On a Friday.
And a beautiful day in Chicago? That's interesting.
Isn't that... I thought... And I know it's April, and it was tax day, even though you have till Monday.
I don't think that's why.
No, I'm looking for some excuse here.
Yeah.
Perhaps
the cost?
Somebody can enlighten us. 312-981-7200. And I know that they're going to have massive crowds all year. But I actually was sitting there thinking, is this the last time Wrigley's not going to be sold out for... a long period, but during the week,
1 o'clock start maybe had something to do with it.
Yeah, but I really think that like people's habits have changed, where on a weeknight nowadays, it's on a Saturday like today, tickets were going for double face.
Yeah, makes sense.
So that's not going to change. But I also think there's some part of the whole effort to get out there and the prices and everything else that people just don't go to the ballpark the way they used to. Maybe I'm wrong. But it was interesting to me. Beautiful day. Cubs just, by the way, went to the National League Championship Series. They beat the St. Louis Cardinals in the playoffs. It's not like the start came out of nowhere. They were the prohibitive favorite to win the World Series. Yet massive seats available. Massive is strong. But, you know, 5,000 tickets. You know, it's not nothing.
Big chunk.
So, I don't know if people's viewing habits are changing at all. 312-981-7200. Brian's in Hammond, had an experience at the park. Go ahead, Brian.
Hey, I just want to comment. I sat down low in Section 7 today, and I noticed it last year, and I felt it again this year, is they blare this loud music between the innings, and it's just really terrible. I tell you, the decibel rating is really high. you can hardly talk to the person next to you. And not to mention the walk-up music. You know, that's all new, too. And I think it really takes away from the enjoyment of Wrigley Field from a traditional sense.
All right.
And so not all the improvements are great, in my opinion.
Thanks, Brian. Appreciate you. 312-981-7200. I hear what he's saying.
It's a different, if it's a different culture now with this team. You have two giant video boards in the outfield now. It's not like the old Wrigley. It's changing, Carm. Adapt to the times.
I know. All right. We'll continue your Cubs talk coming back. Your news is next, 720 WGN.
This is my kingdom.
Now back to the beat.
720 WGN.
Music. This sounds like the Cubs clubhouse.
I love that they go dance party. It's one of Joe Maddon's.
They go hard.
Maybe you'll be there come late October. This will be playing. Powell will be dancing with Rizzo, Chris Bryant, Addison Russell. Get a bacon double cheeseburger from a Wendy's as part of the celebration. What's your favorite fast food sandwich? I know you don't eat fast food anymore.
Yeah, I gave it up. Rest in peace. My favorite fast food burger?
No, sandwich.
Just item? It's the cheese gordita crunch from Taco Bell. The best. That's a Hall of Fame fast food item right there. If you go to Taco Bell and don't order at least one cheese gordita crunch every time you go through the drive-thru, you're doing it wrong.
I just saw a smile come on your face that I don't think I've ever seen before.
Carm, I've been able to hold off for almost 4 full months of fast food, and it's paying off, but yes, you're making it more difficult for me when you force me to talk about the delicious cheese gordita crunch. If you're talking burger, you got to go Big Mac, McDonald's, or hit the dollar menu.
Come on. Really? The Big Mac over the single or the double at a Wendy's? I could argue with you on this, Kevin. Or the Whopper, which is a phenomenal fast food sandwich,
Whopper's
in my
solid.
Opinion.
Wendy's has stepped up their game. They really have. I mean, that's like a gourmet burger you're getting from them.
I feel
it really is.
It's a nice, moist bun. I mean, they really do. I think they do a phenomenal job. Every time I drive by there, I feel the tug, the pull, the emotion. And now they go the 4 for $4.
Yeah, that's a lethal combination. I mean, right there. You get the chicken nuggets, the fries, the burger, and a drink, right?
I won't allow myself to pull in. I'm trying to.
And also, congrats to you for finding a way to use the word moist in today's show.
I thought it was strong. We're about to go out to the West Coast and talk to a man by the name of Travis Rogers, who does radio for ESPN out there, 710 LA. One of the biggest stories of this week was Wednesday night, and I was at the Bulls game listening to Gar Forman and John Paxson afterwards and whatnot. But then I get home and I see that Kobe Bryant had scored 60 points in his final NBA game, and some people are hating on him.
Took 50 shots.
He took 50 shots. I don't care. He got 50.
I don't care either. I'm just saying that was what people were saying.
He took 50 shots. Do you try to get 50 shots off at the age of 37 and make 22 of them and score 60 in your final game? Plus, by the way, lead a team back to victory, 23 in the fourth, and you're talking about a team in the Utah Jazz that was fighting for a playoff spot. Travis Rogers, who I used to work with at Yahoo Sports Radio, although we never saw each other because we were in two different places. I do feel a certain kinship with you, Travis. Thanks for taking time this Saturday afternoon. Appreciate you.
My pleasure.
When people compare in the very end here, Kobe to Michael, like I love going on a YouTube and YouTube Kobe, Michael, the same, and you see identical moves. Over and over.
Yeah, fade away.
So I don't know where you come out on it, and I think a lot of people say that LeBron's a better player than Kobe. But for me, aesthetically, watching those two play, I prefer to watch Kobe. And I don't think we'll ever get a player as close to Michael, just in the way that he played exactly like him.
Yeah, I think you said it really well. I think Kobe is the closest thing we've ever seen and maybe ever will see to Michael Jordan. You know, Michael Jordan, I think, at least for me and for most people, is the greatest basketball player that I've ever seen. And Kobe got pretty damn close. You know, he wasn't Jordan, but he was real, real close. Yeah. He's similar in style. As far as the 60 point night, it was insane. I mean, I've been really lucky. I've been doing this for over 20 years now. I've gotten to go see some really cool stuff, and I've been to heavyweight championship fights and Rose Bowls and Super Bowls and World Series and everything else, and this is right at the top of the list. Watching an old man just go bananas for 1-9 and score 60 yeah. points was as much fun as I've had at a sporting event in a really, really long time. It was the whole place, and Kobe Bryant is just so – he's so connected to the city of Los Angeles. People love him, almost irrationally so. They don't even want to hear about all the negative things about Kobe, and they love him, and there were tens of thousands of people outside the Staples Center that weren't even going to go into the game. It was remarkable, and it was just fun. It wasn't a real basketball game in the sense that Utah was kind of letting him do his thing, but it was just an incredibly fun night.
Well, Travis, you mentioned the town loves him, and we kept hearing all week, and sort of as his career came to a close, everyone kept saying, he means so much to L.A., he means so much to it, they mm-hmm. love him here. What is it about Kobe that really has won the fans over there, and what's his place in a town full of stars?
I think he's real close to the top. You know, I think it's a generational thing. I think if you ask somebody my age, I think most people will tell you that the greatest Laker of all time is Magic Johnson. And we saw Magic when he was in his prime, and Magic played with joy and incredible exuberance, and he made his teammates better, and he looked like he was having a good time. If you ask somebody a little bit younger than I am, it's Kobe, but Kobe played with rage, and Kobe was snarling and barking and screaming at people, which, you know, isn't for everybody. If you ask somebody maybe my dad's age, it's probably Kareem is the greatest Laker of all. The Lakers are fairly spoiled that they have these sorts of players to choose from. But the love for Kobe is like nothing I've ever seen. It's irrational. It is complete. And quite frankly, it's a little scary because they don't want to hear it. I on my show, I still have people calling me, telling me that they think if Kobe came back, he could be the MVP. That's just insane. He clearly could not be. But they believe it. They believe it. They, coming into this season, Kobe hasn't been a good player in the NBA for four seasons. And coming into this year, people thought he could win a scoring championship. People thought he could be an MVP. People thought that he could lead them to a playoff berth. And obviously, none of those things are true. But they believed it, which is both incredibly admirable and terrifying simultaneously.
Yeah. Travis Rogers, radio host out in L.A., ESPN 710, joining us here on 720 WGN. All right, moving on from Kobe to that other team that plays in California, not the Sacramento Kings, but the 73, or the Clippers, I suppose, 73-9 Golden State Warriors. I actually don't think the 72-10 Bulls team was their best team. I prefer the younger version of Michael. But when you get into that comparison talk, what is the standard thing that you're hearing as far as people's view in your neck of the woods?
I think that it depends on what set of rules we're playing with. If we play with the rules that when the Bulls were playing, I think the Bulls beat the Warriors. If we're playing with the rules now, I think that the Warriors win. I think the Bulls come closer to beating the Warriors under modern basketball than the Warriors would come to beat the Bulls under basketball of the 90s. I don't think either team sweeps either team. I think that the Bulls are a little bit better because of Michael Jordan, because Scottie Pippen and Dennis Rodman, and I mean they were loaded. And I think Jordan's an interesting case, and I'm sure people in Chicago don't feel this way, but I think people outside of the city of Chicago, we've almost forgotten how good he is. We all know he was the best player ever, but we almost forget Michael never lost when it really mattered. Yeah. And the Warriors lose one here and there, and not that they lose a whole bunch, but I picked against Michael Jordan too many times in my life. I would never pick against him in anything where you're keeping score. He's just that guy.
What's your take, Travis, on, you know, you got old guys like Oscar Robertson saying things like, these guys don't know how to play defense, I don't know what they're teaching, and Scottie Pippen says they'd sweep mm-hmm. Golden State, where the Bulls, and I, you know, love them and think they're the best team of all time, but they never swept anyone in the finals. I almost feel like it's just a reality. The fastest runner of all time right now is Usain Bolt. It's not Edwin Moses. Mm-hmm. The fastest swimmer is not Mark Spitz. People are longer. They're faster. They're better trained. Yet, for whatever reason, some of the old athletes, they won't give the proper respect to what's going on today. Nobody could do what Steph Curry is doing back in the day. I feel like at some point, like some of these young guys be like, listen, you guys were great, but we've advanced past where you were.
Yeah, well, I want Oscar Robertson to ask somebody how you defend somebody that can make jump shots from half court. I want to know how you're supposed to defend that, because Oscar Robertson's a bitter old man, and he's angry, and he's surly, and he's bitter. And I don't know why, but he is. And Steph Curry would tear him apart. This is just one of these things that it's an old guy who wants to be relevant, who doesn't want to be the guy that watches the game go past him. Michael Jordan was better than him. Steph Curry is better than him. And he was a great player. He was a great player. But like you said, him saying that, well, they don't play defense. How do you defend a guy that can make buckets at 40 feet? I don't. There is no defense for that. And until they figure it out, Oscar Robertson's an old man, is a crank and bitter and angry, and that's that.
Well said. Well said, Travis. Before we let you go, you guys now have a football team again. Is there any sort
How about
of
that?
Yeah? Is there any sort of are people excited for one and two? You guys are going to take Jared Goff, right? The California boy?
I think they're going Carson Wentz.
Well, it's funny. Yeah, I think the first part of your question, yes, people are very, very excited to have the Rams here. As far as who they take, I don't know. I think that most people think that they're going to take Carson Wentz, but yeah. Whoever they take, they better get it right because they gave away the whole store to go get that guy. And here's whoever it is, here's what they got stacked against him. They're going to be the first pick in the NFL draft, which comes with an incredible amount of pressure. They're going to be the first pick in the NFL draft, giving away your entire draft pick behind you for the next 2 years, which adds an additional amount of pressure. It's a brand new team in the city of Los Angeles, which adds a brand new pressure. And it's L.A., where there's, yep. You know, there's 15 million people in L.A. This is everything is stacked up for this to be about as difficult as it can. And if you take a kid out of Bismarck, North Dakota, to be that guy, you better be right, because if you're wrong, everyone's screwed.
Right, and it's unbelievable to me that if you're in the NFL right now and you don't have a quarterback and you're sitting where the Rams were, was at 15, and you got four teams in front of you that all need a quarterback, I get being desperate, but like, you got a brand new team, you're going to be selling out, just build it the right way. I think that was a huge mistake, but that's just me.
I don't think it's a great idea either. If they get the right guy and it turns out that Carson Wentz or Jared Goff or whoever it is that guy, but I don't think anybody's sitting at home thinking that either one of those guys is the next Andrew Luck or Cam Newton.
Right.
I mean, you just don't see it. And if it were Luck or Newton or a player like that, then you say, yeah, you go get him and you see what happens. But it sure doesn't feel like either one of those guys is a player like that.
Yeah, and if that was the situation, then Tennessee probably doesn't trade the pick, or they make a more aggressive move and trade Mariota. Travis, you are a talented man. We appreciate you coming out with us.
My pleasure, guys. Have fun. Thank you for having me.
Thanks, Travis. Appreciate it. Travis Rogers, great radio host out in L.A. 710, doing the Los Angeles work and popping on for a little, the big story of the week.
Carson Wentz, just in my opinion, would be a better pick than Jared Goff.
Yeah, but like, okay, they traded a first-round pick next year, a third-round pick next year, multiple picks this year.
Oh, I agree, yeah. If you're talking whether that was a smart decision or not. It's a stretch.
I mean, the Redskins did that with RG3. You go back in the day, right. And you know the Cowboys did that with Herschel Walker. None of it never works out well. Ditka did that with the Saints for Ricky Williams.
Right.
You know, I mean, listen, I'd give up the whole farm to get like Kevin Powell.
That makes sense.
Right.
That makes sense. I mean, you traded Adam Hoge away. That's why I'm here.
Right. Well,
kidding. Hoge's back next week. Isn't that his birthday? Is that the deal?
That's true. Happy birthday to Adam Hoge.
Adam Hoge. Check out his mock drafts and Bears coverage. You know, seriously, though, I was driving in. There's no shortage of Bears coverage in this town. Hoge does a hell of a job covering the Bears for the station. WGNRadio.com/Bears. He's got all sorts of little fun tidbits and news leading up to the draft in a couple weeks.
Adam Hoge's Bears blog. Tons of draft stuff, which is coming around quicker than you would think. End of the month here. All right, quick timeout. We will get back to the local baseball and the World Series trek and the excitement in that.
We may even circle back to some Benny the Bull talk. Sad day in Chicago.
I don't
sports.
Know if I can go back into the emotion. 720 WGN.
Back to the beat.
I'm Mark Harmon. He is Kevin Powell. Happy Saturday. Hope you're having a beautiful day, enjoying the weather.
Gorgeous out.
People were laying out today.
I was. I ran on Michigan Avenue during the break in the median there.
Would a Kevin Powell go to an Oak Street beach and just let it all hang out there, wear a Speedo, be that guy?
No, I'm not the Speedo guy. No,
how about a Tommy Bahama?
Oh, I can rock, you know, like maybe a loose sort of Hawaiian shirt. Pop a couple of the buttons. I can't go full top off. Might frighten a few people. or get arrested just for taking their shirt off.
Well, we most definitely would not want that. Don't forget Blackhawk Hockey tomorrow on the air. 1:30, our pregame from the United Center, 2 o'clock, the puck drop, and there's an extended pregame starting at 11 with Steve Cochran, Dave Ennett, and myself out at the United Center. Blackhawks and the Blues game 3.
And both of us, as we talked about earlier, wouldn't be surprised if the Hawks take the next 3. I wouldn't be surprised at all.
No, and the way I
think they're so mentally, they have such a major edge over this Blues team, and this Blues team is so in their own head.
You know who I am enjoying in the series, not in a way that I want to punch him, but I appreciate his competitiveness, is former Blackhawk Troy Brower,
yeah.
who's all over the ice just cracking
he
everyone.
Really was.
I mean, he is.
I miss watching him play all the time.
I mean, he is not leaving any of his competitive fire. I mean, it's full out there for Troy Brower right now. And he used to be here, won a cup in 2010, and, you know, now trying to dethrone the Hawks, so to speak.
And this has turned into a pretty strong rivalry, Hawks-Blues, wouldn't you say?
No doubt. No doubt.
I mean, if you're a Blues fan, you have got to hate the Blackhawks. I mean, right now, the Blackhawks are to the Blues and really the entire division what, like, LeBron was to this era of the Bulls, you know, that you can't get past LeBron, you're not going to win a title. You can't beat the Blackhawks in the playoffs, you're not going to win a title.
No,
especially when you're the way the playoff format is now in the NHL, where you have to play these divisional matchups, whether you're the Wild or the Blues, you've got to play the Blackhawks either in that first round or that second round. You got to beat them if you're going to win a title, win a Stanley Cup.
It's almost, I would think, at least slightly similar from a St. Louis standpoint to, like, the Bulls getting by Detroit back in the day,
right.
Something along
yes.
those lines. It's not that they didn't play every single year, but, you know, it's been a one-year absence.
Well, for the Wild, the Blackhawks have knocked the Wild out of the playoffs 3-4 years in a row, right?
Right. I mean, if you're a Blues fan, Brent Seabrook, who's wreaked havoc on you.
Yes.
Duncan Keith, Patrick Kane, Jonathan Toews.
Right, and these rivalry games, and the way, like, we've seen it here in Chicago, of course, the way you lose a game can be different each loss, if that makes sense. Like yesterday, that is a dagger to the Blues. You get the replay comes down when you think you take the lead, and then just like that, the Hawks score. It's a complete swing of momentum, as we talked about. That's a dagger. That's a tough way to lose. At home, there's a review. You think you're finally gonna go a 2-up on the Blackhawks. Nope.
Yeah.
Let's go to the challenge. Q gets the challenge in, goal gets reversed because of the offsides penalty, and just like that, momentum's on the Blackhawks' side, they score. I mean, that is a tough way to lose.
And we started the show with that, too, just giving credit to Coach Q for getting up on the boards and just screaming, hey, we need a review here. Latero was offsides, even though he made a great pass, and to Tarasenko's having a phenomenal series too. I saw a stat today from Adam Rogowin, who does a great job in Blackhawks PR.
Rogo
with the tweet 7 years ago today. 5 current Blackhawks. That would be back in. You're talking about 7 years ago, right? So do the math on that. What year would that be? Thank you very much.
2009,
right? They made their Stanley Cup playoff debuts. Chicago's played 119 playoff tilts since the 2009. So you got Hossa, Toews, Keith, Kane, and Seabrook. The consistency and the way they've reworked the core, all that. But these guys are so seasoned.
Yeah, and the way they go about it is very businesslike. They don't seem rattled, especially after that game one loss. I don't think anybody, they didn't come across as worried or nervous or anything like that. And by the way, before the playoffs started, 119 playoff games since 2009, as you just mentioned. I believe that was 41 more playoff games than the next closest Western Conference team and 26 more than the next closest team in the entire league, which I think is the Boston Bruins. But a lot of experience with this team.
Which makes you worried, at least on some level.
But yeah, go ahead.
Well, I'm just pointing out, this series right now is super physical.
I know, but everyone keeps pointing to this, they're worn down. The Blackhawks, when they go into a season now at this point, before the season, they don't say to themselves, okay, we've got 82 games and the season's over. The Blackhawks know they are playing into early summer. This is what they're built for now. The players know this. They're expecting this sort of run every single year. So everyone keeps saying, well, maybe they're worn down or this. This is the same, essentially a very similar Blues team they played 2 years ago in the first round. And they lost the first two to the Blues, then win the next four. And then the next series, they swept their next opponent. You know? And I understand where you're coming from. It's certainly a difficult matchup early in the. It's not ideal, but it's they've been through it all. They've been here.
They're knocked off, which you know maybe they won't be, and they'll go back to back for the first time since the Red Wings. I'll believe they're going to win if they go down. If the St. Louis Blues came in and won tomorrow, and then they won on Tuesday. I still think the Hawks were winning the series if they were down 3-1. All right, let's get into news at the top here, and my whole being as a radio host is in question after something today. We'll start that after the 6 o'clock hour. I'm going to give you, you're going to be the judge and jury, Kevin.
All right. Yeah, don't even tell me. I'll save it for the air. I don't even want to know.
I feel a little bit lost after what happened earlier today. 720 WGN.
What in the why?
Chicago sports spoken here. This is The Beat.
WGN. I'm Mark Carmody. Is Kevin Powell. Final hour of The Beat. Busy day in the sports world, as you heard from David Jennings. Cubs, a winner at Wrigley over the Rockies, 6-2. Try to take 2 out of 3 in the series tomorrow. Kevin Powell will be out there. Of course, the Blackhawks practicing today, back on ice at the UC tomorrow afternoon, 2 o'clock puck drop. And our pregame extended starts at 11. Steve Cochran, Dave Ennett, myself out at the United Center. Then Judd, John, and Troy taking over at 1:30. White Sox underway right now. They trail 1-0 in the fourth. And you've got NBA playoffs today. Indiana, an upset winner over Toronto, 100-90. And the Warriors blew out the Rockets, 104-78. But Steph Curry tweaked his ankle, only played 3 minutes in the second half. Probably not a big deal, but yet you hear Steph Curry an ankle tweak, and that's not it's not great if you're a Golden State Warriors fan. Celtics and Hawks about to get underway, and then later tonight it's the Mavericks and the Thunder. Will you watch NBA playoffs? Are you that guy? I don't think you will.
No, I'll watch it. What do you mean, am I that guy? Like, the guy who watches the playoffs is most people aren't going to be watching? Is that what you're saying?
I think it's like a random. You got to be like a diehard NBA guy to watch Mavericks Thunder. Like,
No, that's a matchup with some guys. I mean, watch Russell Westbrook play, get some Kevin Durant action. No, I'd watch that. Dirk Nowitzki. Yeah, if it's on, what else am I going to watch tonight? I'll probably watch some golf replay because I missed most of that today. Luke Donald in the hunt. Go Cats.
What's the tournament this week again?
The RBC Heritage. They're in South. God, I love South Carolina. Mm. They're down at South Carolina Hilton Head.
You have a southern feel to you. You know that?
No, it's not my. No.
No? You have the light hair.
I have a. What do you mean by that?
You just got a relaxed southern demeanor to a Kevin Powell. I feel like you would.
If I didn't live here, I would. No, nah, I'd go west. I'd go to the desert.
Okay, that's fine. I could see you playing out there too.
I love the desert.
But I could see you playing well at like a Myrtle Beach. I think you could do very well.
Yeah, I was. Myrtle Beach is interesting, man. I was out there last fall, and we stayed about 45 minutes south of that Pauly's Island. We went up to Myrtle Beach for a day. That's an interesting place. It's fun.
Sounds like Paul had a good time in Myrtle Beach.
It's a good time.
Something went
one day, and I was out. I was back to Pauly's Island.
So I want to embarrass myself slightly here, and I want it because I felt so uncomfortable, and I want to know if you think that I'm qualified to keep my job. Mm-hmm. So. You know, I'm getting older here, as we all are, and I want to hold on to my youth. I want to feel like I'm, you know,
well,
in my yeah.
Go real quick. If somebody just met you, they would guess you're like upper 20s.
Thank you so much. You don't know what that means. I'm gonna
or maybe younger 30s.
I'll take younger 30s. It's fine. Anywhere in that
because of your demeanor and how you are.
Right.
How old are you?
I'm 42. So I went in today, and I do this like once every 6 months, but eventually like I just keep looking in the mirror, and it gets grayer and grayer.
You got some gray specks in the hair. That's all right, though.
Yeah, but okay. But I went in today, and I lined up the cut and color. So this
Let's see. Move your headphone a little bit.
I mean, check it out. Look at this thing. It's a little bit of a gray blend. I don't want to see. You can't even tell that I did it.
You're weird. The sun's coming through the... Oh, there's like some, you got like the wings going now. It's like the gray wings on each side.
There's just a little bit left on the side, but you know, up top has been taken care of.
Yeah, it looks
See,
good.
I think it looks
tight
better.
And tight.
Don't you think it looks better? A little youthful?
Because I see what you did there. Okay, so the top it was colored. You left the gray on the sides.
It's the gray blend. So, I mean, I walk into, you know, get my hair cut. It's not a barbershop. It's a salon, and there's a ton of women. And then I walk in there and, like, hey, what are you here for? I'm like, I'm getting a cut in color. And like it's embarrassing. I can't really. I'm trying to own it, but I'm struggling to own it here.
No, that's fine. I'm with you. I've gone through that situation when I was younger. One of my sister's best friend's mom, who my mom was friends with, and still is, had her own salon. So my mom would be like, "No, you're getting your haircut there. You know, to support because these are friends. So you go there. So she would take me there, and it was all women.
Right, and
it was all it was me, this kid, and all women there. And it was uncomfortable because a salon is like, and I guess if there's any females listening, 302-981-7200 can chime in on this because we're obviously not experts, but the salon is kind of like the men's locker room.
It is.
You know what I mean? It's like that's their version of it. It's right. Sort of, they kind of let their guard down and just talk and you feel uncomfortable. Maybe I mean, hear some things a couple seats down.
Yeah, and when I walk in and I'm at the desk and I say that, like the heads turn.
Yeah.
Like they hear a male voice and they hear cut and color and they're like, who's the guy that's not confident enough in his gray hair that he's got to go cut color?
So you think they're offended at all that you're sort of in their territory or they're just giving you looks because they don't normally see a male walk into the salon?
I think like on some level it just like there's like a it reeks of insecurity or something. Like maybe I just got to own it. I don't know. I feel better looking in the mirror, but I also feel like this is not right. I gotta be me. Me is gray right now, or grayer.
I think women would appreciate that, like you recognizing where you're at with your life, and where you are with your hair and physically and your age, and you're comfortable with it. Like you're taking care. Like I think women appreciate the guy that you know what I mean takes care of himself a little bit.
312-981-7200 Looking for approval on the color and cut.
So do barbers, do they not do coloring at all? Like, there's got to be a barber out there. Yeah, but that's probably worse, right? Going to a barber, hey, man, can I get some color in here?
I need a Joanna. I need Joanna to step on in there. I can't go to you know, Bob and Rich and Steve. And
right. The boys.
You know, no, I think you can go to Bob and Rich and Steve and have them cut the hair.
But
and,
for the color,
and then
no.
Get the color done that way. But then I feel like I'm kind of... You know, not giving the amount of love that I should to the person who's working hard. Of you know, like if I just go color, then I feel like I'm cheating her. But it's you know.
Plus, it's two stops. Then you just go one stop shop, get the cut, get the color. So how often? How does this work? Because I haven't experienced the grayness in the hair yet.
It'll be back in.
That's what I'm saying. How often do you have to do
two,
this?
2 months.
Oh, really?
6 weeks.
So
but
you did the-
but it holds on. It holds on for a while. But then it's good. It gradually goes and goes, and then like Father Time takes a hold too.
Yeah.
So I think like in theory, like 6 months out, I'm going to be just that much grayer too, and then I can't take it anymore. And I look at myself and I think, yeah, no, we got to make a move.
This looks better, Carm. This is just like the little flash of gray on the side. It says, "Hey, I'm a seasoned veteran," but you also have the nice tight cut on the top, fully colored dark hair. I like it. It's a good angle. You're like a seasoned veteran.
I don't feel comfortable, Kevin.
Still a little pep in his step.
I mean, you know, the hoop game's still there. Tennis is rolling strong. I'm looking forward to the softball season. You coming out, by the way? You going to fill in this year? Can you hit a couple bombs?
Hours probably aren't going to allow me. I may be able to get to some of the late games.
Well, we got 9 o'clock games. You can be there.
Do you really?
Yes, absolutely.
Oh, okay.
Sure.
Show's down at 7.
Hey, taxi driver Bob, you always got good advice. What do you think here, pal? Am I doing the right thing?
I don't know, but I would find it very amusing if you threw down like the capper and just shaved your head and see if you're secure in your manhood to be able to walk around with no hair at all on the top of your head.
Why would I get rid of my hair, taxi driver?
Because it would be amusing, that's why.
Oh, okay.
No other reason.
Okay.
I'm just poking fun with you.
Okay.
You have a great day, dude. It's a beautiful day out here.
All right, Bob. Thank you.
Thank you, Bob. Appreciate you.
Bye-bye.
Bob's a rogue.
Bob is so taken back by your gray hair, he says, forget it. Just get rid of it all. Yeah. A few specks of gray, shave it off. The Catman style.
I mean, I'm not going.
From the 847, Carm. Keep the job, lose the man card.
Thank you, Eric.
The card has been removed.
You don't feel the least bit manly when you... On some level, it's like, I'm comfortable enough. I'm going in the salon. What's up? It's Carm.
That's what I'm saying. The women appreciate the confidence of you even going in there. Like a madman walking into a salon asking for a cut and color.
But then you're like the awkward guy staring at all the women in there. They're checking you out. Do you got a ring on that finger? No, I don't. So you're paying attention to all the clientele.
I got you.
All right. Well,
I think you did well, Carm. I think you made the right move. Because if you went full, I would have noticed. I think I didn't notice because of you left a little gray. You know what I mean? Like if you walked in today and you had a full dark head of hair, I would have noticed something was off.
309, it's okay to color at your young age. I started when asked to do it for a play. All right, so he's an actor. See, that's the thing.
We need the women's perspective here, though. Us men don't know anything.
Well, I'll take both sides. 312-981-7200. There's some interesting. There's one interesting stat that plays into what's going to happen with the Blackhawks and Blues tomorrow. And Kevin's laughing at some of the
texts. Hey, this is a good suggestion. Do you know Joanna? Is that her name?
I know Joanna.
Let's get her on the line.
Oh, I don't know her like that.
Come on.
I don't know her like that.
847 says get Joanna. Ask her what the women say after you leave the salon.
That's a good.
We're getting Joanna on. We're doing it.
All right, we can try to hunt her down. I don't know her number. 720 WGN.
Hey, hey!
The pass.
Ernie Banks got number 500.
The present.
Hey,
hey,
holy
back. Go Cubby. Yes, sir.
Go Cubby. The future.
Baseball is best of all when you win.
Win.
At WGN Radio, the Cubs are in our DNA. The Chicago Cubs conversation on 720.
This is our year.
WGN.
Lester Lampert Jewelers in Chicago has never had a sale, but now the Oak Street store is closing and moving to a new spot on Huron Street to expand the Lester Lampert brand. Therefore, for the first time in 96 years, Lester Lampert is conducting a huge but brief fine jewelry liquidation.
The entire $10 million inventory of incredible diamonds, watches, fine jewelry, and more must be liquidated before our move.
In preparation for this spectacular event, Lester Lampert has searched every safe and identified millions of dollars of inventory which must be sold at never before seen sacrifice prices.
Right now, once in a lifetime savings of up to 60% off. Take advantage of this incredible opportunity to own a fine piece of jewelry from the Lester Lampert collection at these store-wide incredible values.
Lester Lampert's first and only sale ever will take place exclusively at 57 East Oak Street in Chicago. The Oak Street store closing plan is to liquidate $10 million worth of fine jewelry prior to their move to a new location.
Certain exclusions apply.
Have you been keeping up with the environment lately? Why doesn't somebody think of something brilliant to do with all those milk jugs? Enter By the Yard, the premier manufacturer of maintenance-free patio furniture and accessories, made from recycled plastic milk jugs right here in the USA. It's good for you, and it's good for the environment. Buy it once, and you'll never have to replace it. These folks offer the best warranty in the business for a reason. Adirondacks, tables and chair sets, benches, planters, arbors, chaise lounges, rockers, none of which you'll have to store in your garage for the winter. Just pull out the hose in the spring and spray them off. You want to spend your summer entertaining, lounging and relaxing, not painting, staining and storing. Call 847-793-0303 or go online to buytheyard.net to get your free catalog. Don't take care of the outdoor furniture. Let it take care of you and the environment with By the Yard.
Have you put off seeing the dentist because you can't afford to go? Are big dental bills taking a big toll on your wallet? Would you like to have dental insurance but think it's too expensive? If you answered yes to any of these questions, call Physicians Mutual Insurance Company for a free information kit. See how you can help protect your teeth and your wallet for less than a dollar a day. 1-800-400-0806. This is real dental insurance that can help cover over 350 procedures, all the ones you're most likely to need. Everything from cleanings and fillings to crowns and dentures. Your acceptance is guaranteed for one of these insurance policies, even if you're retired or on Medicare. You can see any dentist you choose, and you'll never pay a deductible. Call in the next 10 minutes, and we'll rush you a free information kit with all the details. 1-800-400-0806. That's 1-800-400-0806. 0806. 1-800-400-0806.
With Chicago Tribune Sports Plus, you can relive the best moments of the game anytime you want. Start your 30-day trial at chicagotribune.com/sportsplus.
Chicago Sports Conversation is now The Beat on 720 WGN.
All right, we reached out to Joanna. The salon is closed for the day. So we had to go with the next best thing, which is the very intelligent, the very hip to the scene.
We needed a woman's perspective on this, 100%.
The incredibly talented Amy Guth, who has a show at 7 o'clock, but we've just hijacked her and brought her into the studio. So, Amy, I don't want to make this awkward for you, but...
this would be great.
No, let's make it real awkward. Amy, can you completely judge Mark here while sitting just a few feet across from him?
I judge him often. That's what I do.
I appreciate that honesty.
Arm, set this up. You went into a salon the other day, and you're worried about it.
I looked in the mirror, and you know I shoot videos during the week for Fansided. I'm on camera with like Comcast Sportsnet. Right. This studio has a camera on it. I feel like I want to look like a youthful whatever. Plus, I'm a single guy. I'm dating around. I got that factor that in. So I like looking younger. So I went for the cut and color because I got the gray going on.
Yeah, you had a lot of gray hair.
Amy's giving me a look of like, she's like moderately...
I'm giving you side eye is what I'm doing. Okay, so...
Let's break this down. Go ahead.
Let's break this down because there are many topics here. So first of all, you say you want to look younger. What are you aiming for? And is it because you want to pick up women that are not age appropriate for you?
Ooh, now we're going even further down the road.
Yeah, this is getting interesting here.
Define age appropriate.
Like, what are you going for? Like 17, 18 year olds, Carm, or what are you thinking?
Yeah, we're not going there. Well, let's get off the.
Are you looking for women in your general age range?
What's general?
I don't know how old you are.
I'm 42. Okay. What would be general to you on that one?
I don't know, late 30s to early 40s.
No, I mean, sure, but like, I mean, I'd like to stretch that down to like, I like to be in like a 10 year window.
What would be too young in your opinion for Carm? Like, what's the cutoff? 30?
No, Amy's going to go 35 up, I think.
Yeah, I'm going to go 35 up on that.
Right.
Yeah.
See, I would dip down to like 33.
Sure you would. Yeah. And so you're saying you would like to, you believe that you would not be able to do so as effectively.
No, I'm not saying that.
Okay.
It's more for me just looking in the mirror more than anything else. Because I think most feedback from women is like, keep the gray.
Yeah, keep the gray.
But a touch of it, right? Like he's got just the touch of gray going on.
Yeah, what is the whole thing was gray? Because that's where we're headed.
That's where we're all headed. That's the thing. We're all headed there.
You got to fight it off. You got to battle. No?
You know what? There's a very different standard for men than women. I mean, for when women go gray, it's like there's a lot of ageist stuff, especially in the business that we're in. And suddenly, you know, there's a lot of pressure to dye your hair and all that kind of stuff. But for men, there is a degree of looking distinguished.
Yeah, it's like the seasoned veteran. That's what I was saying, Carm. You look good, man.
So I'm more in touch with my feminine side and I'm taking on the fight with you, Amy. No, you can't see it that way.
That's perhaps a little further than I was willing to go.
Okay, one more thing, too. Carm was, like, sensitive about going into his salon and maybe what the women are saying behind his back when he leaves. He's the only guy in there, a room full of women. We compared it to the salon is for women what, like, the men's locker room is for us. Like, that's sort of the territory where you can kind of let your guard down, talk about whatever you want. Like, men are...
Amy's look is one of pure confusion right now.
Well, I'm just kind of processing that because where else are men supposed to get their hair cut?
At the barber shop.
The barber. Oh, like the salon is the women's place.
You know, the thing that spins outside on the street.
That's the barber. That's where you should be going.
That screams, men, come in here. Get a $10 haircut. Don't be spending $40 for a cut and $30 for a color and then tipping whatever that was tipping. And like,
aren't you living in the 20th, not the 21st century? Salon has been cool for men since the mid to late 90s. Hell, I go to get a pedicure.
David Jennings weighing in from news who has no hair on his head, but apparently does go for a pedicure, which is interesting.
Yeah, why not?
That's very important. That's super important.
You like a guy with some good nails down the feet?
Hands and feet. I think a nicely groomed fellow is very important.
That's what I said, too. Women appreciate the fine grooming.
I'm pro pedicure. I'm pro manicure.
I mean, look, I still get a little weirded out by it, but it's like no one pays me any attention.
Yeah, no, especially at nail salons. I see men going to get pedicures and manicures all the time.
Hell, I see men doing them. I saw a man doing the manicure.
Yeah. That would ruin it.
Nobody cares. Nobody cares at all.
All right. So don't worry, Carm.
Like, none of the women in there care. None of the women are
That's
like...
That's what my question was. When Carm walked out today, no one was like, "Who? Why was that guy here?"
No, right? I guarantee you not one woman was like, "How weird that a man went to a salon."
Why did the person when I said I'm getting a cut in color, the person right to my right at the desk, I mean, turn hardcore facial turn.
Carm,
and like,
you can't say it all nonchalantly like that. You got to act like
Because you said color?
No, Carm walks in.
I think it's because I said color. Like, I mean, I'm telling you, look.
That's no good.
Okay. It's because you said color.
Yeah.
Okay, so there is a judgment on the color.
I think
I'm here to hide my gray.
Standard. Yeah, I think there's a different standard for men and women. I think I could walk into a salon and say that quite easily, and have done so, and. Like, not...
Of course.
Nobody blinks. But I think if a dude does, it's like, oh, my gosh, he's so vain.
That.
Why would he color his hair? But there's plenty of men that do, especially in this business.
Don't say color, dude.
What do you...
What do I got to say?
You go in and be like, you know, I got some gray hair. Can you help me out here?
No, don't not say it. It's not like...
Just kind of drop it in there casually.
I'm saying don't do it.
Color.
I'm saying embrace it and own it and...
Just join the hair club for men thing, you know? Do the thing at home.
No, because then they put the, you know... Tighten curlies on top of your head. Don't do that.
Okay, never mind.
I mean, that whole thing that you guys do with foil and...
The highlights.
Yeah, no. Okay, there, that's not...
You wouldn't need that, because you're not in a boy band. You're not going to do, like, frosted tips. Don't do that. You want to color your hair, don't you?
If Jennings is loving it.
You really do. You want
I do.
To color your
I
hair.
Do. I want no gray. If I could just go... If price is no object and I wasn't spending like $100 every 6 weeks to do it...
You just spent $100?
No, it wasn't quite that much. But it's, you know, it's... Color your hair is like $40. Yeah. I feel like that's a lot of dough for a dude on like some little hair that I got going on.
Okay, so there's a product that is available at drugstores that comes with like a little paintbrush.
Yeah,
and it's for root touch-up. And that is like $9.
Right, but then I got to do it myself and I don't think it's going to look... Look is good, and I don't have the confidence. I'm gonna have like a whole thing in my sink, and it's just gonna be a disaster. I need a professional.
Yeah,
don't you think? I mean, you can
your coloring.
If you are hell bent on doing this, which I say, do not do it.
Okay.
But if you really, really believe you need to be coloring your hair, first of all, you're gonna be stuck doing it. So I would suggest you get semi-permanent dye that will fade out rather than have lines, because then you're gonna have like a little gray line.
Pro
where
tips
it's growing
right here.
Up.
Pro tips.
There's nothing Amy that knows. Amy doesn't know.
Right.
That's true. That's
true. And she's also right when she says you probably shouldn't do it, because I've got gray in my, I've got a lot more gray than I used to in my beard, and most of the women I know leave it alone. It's fine.
And I would also like to say for the record, a couple of weeks ago, David Jennings like pointed at my head and was like, "Gray hair," like pointed out a gray hair or five to me. Thank you.
I trust Amy.
Hi, Amy.
In this conversation,
you're so nice.
I don't trust Jennings. Okay, we have to get to news.
Good plan.
We will see you in 15 minutes, Amy.
Yeah.
Thank you for the help. 720 WGN.
He's so useful in all areas, and he's a threat in a lot of different ways. Whether it's just that scored a big goal for us. I mean, that broke the goose egg, and you know, we got a big lift off of that.
Yeah, he brought a lot. Like I said, you know, in our own zone. You know, penalty kill, power play, offensive zone. It was nice to see him get one.
Oh, it was just kind of nice to shake a little rust off there and, you know, get my legs back underneath me. It's different when you're skating and practicing and training and working out to jumping into a game, especially when it's fast-paced like that. So it's nice to get that in and then get going again.
Welcome back indeed. 720 WGN. Welcome back to you, Duncan. Keith, six-game suspension ending last night, and the goal that got the Blackhawks even at 1:30-plus minutes on the night on the ice for Duncan Keith, who they definitely missed in game one. Although, Trevor Van Riemsdyk, the old TVR, playing some solid hockey. They need Duncan Keith. There's no question about it. But they're getting some good play on the back end here.
They're getting minutes from TVR. Keith was a huge boost yesterday, and that goal with just seconds remaining in the second period, when the Blues thought they had all the momentum going into intermission and then into the third period, was completely taken away when Keith fired that one from near the blue line to tie it up at a goal apiece. So He was missed and had a very strong game last night.
A lot went on that play, too. I mean, Tays, first of all, wins the draw. He gets it right to Kane, who one-touches it to Keith, and then 7 seconds later, or 3 seconds later, it's in the net. And you also had Shaw and Tays screening.
Yep, a lot of traffic up front. And we talked about this before, but that game, again, the way that the Blues lost that game and the way the Hawks won was a dagger, a series-turning moment, whatever you want to call it. And you and I would not be surprised if the Hawks won the next three.
I wouldn't, but if I had to predict it right now, I think the series is going to go 7 games.
Really?
At least 6. There's no way.
I think we can all agree that they will be low scoring, considering the physicality and the defense, the quality of defense that's being played. And Crawford has looked great in the 2 games. I mean, remember, he missed a month. This is just his 3rd game back in a month.
It's impressive. And
Brian Elliott's played really well for the Blues too.
He has, and
he's kind of stole that first game for them.
And when you're watching the games, it's like nothing's happening, nothing's happening. It's a grind it out, dump and chase, get the puck to the net, simple game. You can't really take a whole lot of risk. Then all of a sudden, you know, the Blues will get some incredible opportunity. But other than that, it's just such a grind, these games right now. There's just not a lot of free ice going on out there.
And even the goals that have been scored have been like real kind of dirty, not clean guys battling in front of the net. I mean, Andrew Shaw is built for series like this, right? Like sort of that pit bull player on your team. He's a guy you want on your team if you're a fan of the Blues or any other opponent for the Blackhawks. You're not a fan. He's one of those guys. You know, he's always going to be out there nagging your players, getting scrappy. Sure, every once in a while he'll take a dumb penalty, but for the most part makes up for it.
That's okay. you know, Michael Roosevelt, who was responsible for the Blues goal last night, he had such an enormous hit earlier in the game that I thought that perhaps he was playing in that one moment like he was expecting to get drilled, so he wasn't protecting the puck. But the point I'm making is that it's so physical out there, and here's a guy in Andrew Shaw who's getting hit all the time, and he just doesn't stop.
No, doesn't stop. You want to plug tomorrow? You guys are going to be out there. You'll be out with the Steve Cochran and Dave Ennett tomorrow?
11 to 1:30 as the pre-game.
Any guests you can plug yet?
I don't know who's coming on. I do not. I have not seen that. But I don't think it'll be Andrew Shaw, who's getting ready for the game. But 5'10", I'm just looking it up here, 5'10", 180 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, think about that.
Plays much bigger than that. Not
and
a big guy.
And he's not 5'10", right?
Yeah, that's true. Probably 5'9"-ish. The little guy.
And he's getting cracked from behind. He's getting cracked by Elliott. And he just hangs in there and then gets the game winner last night. It didn't turn out to be the game winner because the Blues had a goal with a second to go. That was
right.
That
I walked away. I thought the game was over. The clock's ticking down, and they sneak one in at the end.
There's a great piece also, as we had Chris Hine earlier on in the show. He's got a phenomenal piece on Jonathan Toews, who apparently, no surprise, has been living the Jonathan Toews lifestyle since he was like 10 years old. He'd have sleepovers, and they'd be lifting weights and then playing hockey and then going to bed and then getting up in the morning and like doing it again. I mean, this has been this guy's life forever. Toews now is gluten-free. He's got 3 tower gardens, which are, as written by Chris, essentially small trees with pods that grow food for his home in Lincoln Park. He uses grow lights to help maintain the garden. The only thing I know about grow lights in a garden wasn't for vegetables.
Bring you back to your college days, Tom.
It sure does. Although, let's see, he likes to grow basil and parsley and kale and collard greens and spinach and lettuce. Dave Ennett should be buddies with Jonathan Toews.
If Toews seems like the kind of guy, though, and Chris sort of wrote about it, you probably don't want to go out to eat with him too often because he's the one critiquing your diet and telling you how bad everything is that you're eating. You know, oh, man, you shouldn't. You know what's in that? You shouldn't be eating that, dude. Have some collard greens. You want some kale from my farm, my Lincoln Park farm?
And he, there's one quote in there where he says, like, you know, I've tried to realize that the way I live is...
yeah, it's like, dude, you're a little intense.
It's not for everyone.
I'm going to eat a cheeseburger. I apologize, Jonathan. You can have your kale salad. I'll have this bacon cheeseburger.
Yeah, there's a quote from Patrick Kane, and they're saying, quote, usually if something's going on in the locker room and Taze is late or we can't find it, we say maybe he's taking care of his garden. That's usually the go-to joke. The Taze garden. I mean... You're in an NHL locker room or a professional locker room, and you're...
Yeah, he should have told his teammates that he has a garden.
Well, he can get away with it.
As you just said, he probably gets a lot of crap from it, unless they just say behind his back.
I mean, if you're like Michael Roosevelt or backup goalie Scott Darling, and you've got the garden, they might just boot you off the team. We're not playing. Get the garden guy out of here.
Yeah, Van Riemsdyk's gloating about his three gardens at his Lincoln Park house. I don't think he's getting away with that the way Taves is.
I don't know how Chrisheim got him to open up. And, like, how do you even get to that point? Hey, man, you got a garden?
Right. Well, I think it's probably stemmed from the diet talk, but
what do you do with your diet there? How do you get your produce intake? Well, I actually have a garden.
He's not the kind of guy, Taves, we're talking about here, who sort of, half-asses it. He's sort of, if I'm going to do anything, I'm going all out. And it talks about him changing his diet, and that's how he got to this point where he's a gardener. Jonathan Taves is a gardener.
Hey, and... good for him, by the way, at the end of the day here. This is props.
Jonathan Taves at the farmer's market with his kale and his parsley.
Yeah, it's Taves. I'm coming down. Can you load up the quinoa? What's the newest, that's awful.
I don't know. What is the real trendy, hip, awful-tasting food these days? Kale's still around.
There's a great vegetable out there that we're not hitting. 312-981-7200. Feel free to text me.
Suggest what you think Jonathan Taves should farm next.
I mean...
Is Taves missing a vegetable?
Because
some superfood, the new trendy... Amy will know this. We'll ask her when she comes in 5 or 10 minutes.
It's always next level. The other thing that was in there, too... Well, there's a ton in this piece that will be in your Chicago Tribune Sunday paper tomorrow. It's online right now. Walter Payton had his famous hill, right?
Yeah.
And where he would do intense workouts in the off season, and guys would join him, and they'd puke and say, thanks, Walter, but this is not for me. See you later.
Right.
Taze worked out on a 400-foot, 45-degree angle hill behind what's called the Terry Sawchuk Arena in Winnipeg. So he's getting drilled at 11, 12, 13, 14 years old, working out on a hill. I mean, Walter had a poster with this hill, and the yardage was on there and everything.
It's intense, dude. And again, as you mentioned, Jonathan Taves, as an 11-year-old, invites his friend over for a sleepover. His friend's excited. What most normal kids would do is watch movies, stay up late, eat junk food, get some pizza. Kid walks in, Jonathan Taves, 11-year-old Taze, says, hey, man, I got an entire circuit workout planned for us in the basement. We're going to do some push-ups. We got chin-up, all sorts of things. Then a skate session, and then we're going to bed at 9 p.m. sharp. Got to get up early for our next workout.
Real quick,
Taser.
Real quick, Ray's got a suggestion for Taves as we try to go next level. Ray, you're on 720 WGN. Go ahead.
Yeah, the next superfood, which is really good for you, is beets.
All right.
The old school beet?
Yes, red beets. You make either eat them or cook them or use them in juice.
I believe that when you use the beets, though, everything changes, and then you start. It's an aggressive vegetable, is what I'm saying here, Ray. If you get where I'm going,
yes.
Yeah. Thank you, Ray. Appreciate you. Beets are terrible. It's an awful taste, but I bet you could somehow make a beet.
Mask the flavor.
Yes.
Like with kale, the only time I've had kale that was edible was sautéed with onions and bacon for a while, and it still tasted awful. It tastes like yard clippings. I googled superfood, and the first headline that popped up is why black rice is a star superfood. I wonder if Taze is on the black rice train.
I could get involved in the black rice with a chicken. Thank you. All right, final timeout. Amy Guth's going to be back in here. We'll get ready for the Saturday night special. That's straight ahead, 720 WGN.
Chicago Sports Conversation is now on 720 WGN.
Carm? What did I just say? Yard card? What just happened? You owe me $100.
I do?
I was explaining. Were you not listening? Were you half listening when I was explaining the yard card game to you?
I was like 78% listening.
All right, yard card. If you go to the baseball game, everybody gets a yard card. If you're with like a few people, everybody gets a yard card. You can use it once a game. And if you say yard card and the next pitch is a home run, however you want to do it with your buddies, the collective group has to pay you $100. So oof. I was only watching with you. I went yard card. Lori just hit a two-run shot.
I owe you $100?
You owe me $100.
I don't know if I'm going to really...
This seems like a terrible game.
Yard card. Try it out. It's fun.
Next time I go to a baseball game with Patty Vasquez, we'll play yard card, I suppose.
You guys do... You guys are baseball buddies. Like, you're all over the Instagram with Patty Vasquez.
Well, that's the one and only time we've ever been to a baseball game. So it might be, like, a little over the top to say we're baseball buddies. We were baseball buddies yesterday.
No, you guys are baseball besties.
Yeah, I feel like you're on her Instagram a lot.
Yeah, you're on her Instagram a lot, Carm.
I do. Well, Patty and I are we have a bestie relationship. That's true.
Yes, you do.
I mean, we went and did Marine boot camp together. I mean, when you go to that level, when you're with another woman who's doing Marine boot camp and she... goes to the bathroom on the course and you can share that moment. I mean, that's a level.
Right.
You know, I don't have
I feel
that with
like
many women.
There's some shared history of angst there. You've been through some stuff together.
Hey, to wrap up the superfood real quick. Amy, are you all about the superfoods?
Absolutely.
Okay. We were talking about this because Jonathan Taves apparently is a part-time farmer and likes to grow kale and all that stuff that doesn't taste good.
Technically, he's a gardener.
He's a gardener. Kiwi, sun-dried tomatoes, and beets are the latest superfoods, says the texter from 773. Garlic. Have you heard garlic is a superfood?
Absolutely.
Somebody tells me...
garlic has antibiotic qualities.
Okay.
It's very good for you.
All right.
As
you can get
honey.
Behind garlic. A little better tasting than kale. And I've also heard things about ginger. Have you heard that?
Ginger is extremely good for digestion.
That's what I heard.
It's very,
because I have heartburn issues, and somebody said try out some ginger.
If you feel nauseous, like to just have a little piece of ginger.
Wow.
Ginger tea, something like that. Very good.
What about the blueberry? I hear it cures cancer or keeps it away.
I don't know about cures or keeps it away, but it's very good for you.
I love some blueberries.
There is a South American hangover cure that is essentially... blueberry and gosh, I think it's goji berry that is quite effective. Let's see.
So you've tested it and proven it. Okay. I need this recipe or whatever. Is it a drink you make? Or?
Mm-hmm. It's like a smoothie. It's just dark purple.
I need that for
goji berries are good for you. Kale is good for you. You just have to do something with it. Here's the key. You got to pull the stems off. The stems are bitter. Just go with the leaf. Like pull that stem off, chop it up, shred it, make it like coleslaw.
Drinks with kale in it, and you can't really taste it. You know, get other things.
But it's good on its own. You just have to bring out the flavors and know what to do with it.
What about a Brussels sprout? Does that take you to the next
Brussels
level?
Brussels sprouts.
Kale is healthier, but they're both in that cruciferous family.
There's nothing Amy Guth doesn't know. You'll be learning more tonight at 7 o'clock, which is just the truth.
Minutes away.
I mean, yes, but like, really, Amy, so you read a lot, don't you?
I read a lot. I'm really good on a Trivial Pursuit game. I'm a good, good teammate to have because I have a lot of useless information in my head that just sometimes works out, I can blurt it out on the radio.
Can you paint a picture of, like, was it a sixth grade, like a 10-year-old Amy just sitting in, like, some corner reading, like... I don't know.
Sixth grade?
Yes. Like, when did you start reading, like, Nietzsche and
The Art
definitely,
of War?
Definitely by middle school. Definitely. Definitely. I was always a big reader. I mean, I have a typewriter tattooed on my shoulder. I'm a
really?
Big fan. Of, yeah. I'm all about that stuff.
Wow. Amy Guth is cooler than me and
but I was,
you.
I was really shy for a long time. So reading was, you know, that was quite social to me. Like, that was my thing that I did because I was just... You know, I could just have my nose in a book.
So on the couch with Amy Guth for just one more minute here before we hand off the show to you. What broke you through your shyness? How did that happen?
I'm not sure exactly. I mean, I was very, very tall. I'm 5'10", and I've been 5'10" since I was about 13 or 14.
Wow.
So I think eventually just, you know, people talk to you if you're that much taller than everybody in middle school. And so eventually, I don't know, I just kind of shook it. It worked.
So
by high school, I was...
By high school, you had the confidence?
Yeah, yeah.
I'm still working on that. How's your confidence coming along, KP?
It's mediocre. It's there.
It's mediocre.
I'm able to talk on the radio and speak in front of large groups of people from time to time.
Do we have one more break? We do. All right, we'll take one more break, and then we'll hand it off to Amy. 720 WGN.